Very much indeed. Hello, a very good morning to you. It's Bank Holiday Monday, the 25th of August. You are listening to Ben Kentish here, in for Nick Ferrari this morning on the show.
It's really important that further action is taken to get a grip on the situation. It does no one any good whatsoever to be stuck in hotels for months and years on end.
The government promises to overhaul the asylum appeal system in a bid to cut the number of migrants staying here in hotels. It follows, doesn't it, another weekend of protests against the use of migrant accommodation, with demonstrations in Bristol, Liverpool and Newcastle, among others. But will this latest plan have any impact? And should the rights of asylum seekers really be curtailed? We'll discuss. And
we have got no dialogue or no clarity or detail from the Ministry of Justice. The challenge we have is logistically when you start to look at extrapolating this up over a national scale.
Forget prison, commit a crime and you could be banned from football matches, pubs and concerts. How is that going to work? Bring in the details in the next hour.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. A former Labour Home Secretary says the Prime Minister needs to give a comprehensive answer to tackling small boat crossings. Writing in a newspaper, Lord Blunkett says the government needs to have a more radical approach. More than 28,000 people have crossed the Channel so far this year, as the government have announced plans to speed up the appeal process. Shoaib Khan is a human rights lawyer.
Regardless of what this government says, what the media says, what so many politicians say, these people aren't coming here for the £40 a week asylum support they're going to get. They are coming here so they can get to a safe place, eventually at some point, hopefully, be joined by their families.
Campaigners say the government can only fulfil their pledge to tackle violence against women and girls if it properly addresses child sex abuse. Charities including Barnardo's and the Internet Watch Foundation have written to ministers to raise concerns over its scope in the upcoming strategy. Anna Edmondson is from the NSPCC.
Each year, around 500,000 children in England and Wales will experience some form of sexual abuse. And though this affects all children, including boys, we know that girls overwhelmingly bear the brunt of some forms of sexual abuse and violence, including that taking place online.
The government says the new strategy will include targeted action to tackle child sexual exploitation and abuse, as well as other violence against women and girls crimes. Police in Northern Ireland are still questioning a 37-year-old man on suspicion of drink driving after three children were hit by a car in Belfast. It happened yesterday afternoon when two girls and a boy were playing on a pavement in the west of the city. Their condition is currently unknown. It's being suggested nearly 800 cases of shoplifting have been going unsolved every day. Figures obtained for the Liberal Democrats have been released covering the year to March, showing nearly more than half across England and Wales failed to identify a suspect. And Emma Raducanu admits she's been feeling the pressure at the US Open since winning the title there 4 years ago. Her first round win in New York against qualifier Eni Shibahara was her first match victory there since the triumph in 2021. Novak Djokovic and Aryna Sabalenka also picked up first round wins. Jack Draper begins his campaign later. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine, cloudy across the far west with rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
The Toyota CHR. Striking design. Trusted hybrid technology. Choose self-charging or plug-in hybrid. With Toyota know-how, reliability is built in. Now available at 0% APR representative over 24 months. And right now, enjoy an extra £1,500 off. Ready to go with confidence? Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Available on PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by September 30th. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Minutes after seven is the time. Hello there. A very, very good morning to you this Bank Holiday Monday. You are listening to me, Ben Kentish, in for Nick Ferrari here on LBC this morning. Busy show coming up a little later this hour, bringing you the details of why the housing secretary is under pressure over her own housing situation. Plus, why it's boys more than girls that are being let down by the education system in this country, according to a new report. But first this morning, the former human rights barrister, now Prime Minister, who seem to have a problem with human rights, at least those being held by migrants. At least that is the claim from critics this morning, after the government vowed to overhaul the appeal system in the asylum process in order to deport more people who have their asylum claims rejected. As things stand, a lot of people in that category, failed refugees, in other words, are going to court, they're going to a tribunal, and judges are ruling that because of their human rights, they do not have the government does not have the right to deport them. And that is what Keir Starmer and Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary, want to stop. Instead of judges ruling on those cases, the government is reportedly drawing up plans to have what's been called a commission of professional adjudicators to make those decisions instead. So you don't like what the judges are doing, take the judges' powers away and give it to somebody else that presumably the government will have a large say in appointing. Does that bother you at all? I say it again, this is a man who spent his life, or most of his life up until now at least, fighting in defence of people's human rights. Now saying, well actually, if those same human rights are being used to stop people being deported, let's get someone else to make the decisions. How much do asylum seekers' human rights matter to you? Or when it comes to tackling the backlog and getting down the cost of those astonishing £7-8 billion hotel bills every single year, do you just think, I'm sorry, but human rights go out the window? Human rights go out the window. The government is right to be prioritising cost savings and more deportations over migrants' rights. Give me a call this morning. 03456060973 is the number. You can WhatsApp me on the very same number or text me if you prefer, 84850. There have been concerns raised already, of course, about the impact this will have on watering down potentially the human rights of migrants. Speaking to my colleague Lewis Goodall here on LBC yesterday, Labour MP for Derby North, Catherine Atkinson, addressed those very concerns.
Of course, there needs to be appropriate legal safeguards, but it's really important that further action is taken to get a grip on the situation. I think that's what this government has already been doing. It does no one any good whatsoever to be stuck in hotels or elsewhere for months on end. And I think that actually having a system that is efficient and works well is in everyone's interest.
On the Tory side, the Shadow Minister for Crime, Policing and Fire, Matt Vickers, called on the government to implement a wider reform of the system to fast-track asylum decisions.
The reality is that much of the problem in our courts with some of these deportation cases comes back to the Human Rights Act. We need to untie some of these issues that we've got the Human Rights Act. We need to get on with it, because if you arrive in this country illegally, you should be sent home. We can't go on like this.
What do you make of this then? Watering down migrants' human rights in order to deport more of them if their asylum claims are rejected. 03456060973. Talk to somebody who helped organise some of the counter demonstrations this weekend in just a moment. First, Andrew Tettenborn joins us, writer and academic. Andrew, very good morning to you. Keir Starmer will be accused of hypocrisy here, will he not? Having been a human rights barrister for so long, now leading a government that's accused of watering down migrants' rights. Morning.
Good morning, Ben. Well, the answer is, of course, yes. Having said that, the human rights issue is actually much more complex than it looks. The real objection is not so much to the existence of the human rights in the Human Rights Convention, as to the way those human rights are interpreted, both by the immigration judges and actually also by Strasbourg. Now, the trouble is that the government here is in a bind, because I think there's very little doubt that our interpretation of the European Convention on Human Rights when it comes to failed asylum seekers and so on is remarkably generous to the asylum seekers. Because it's a fairly flexible criterion, but I think it's fairly clear that we do interpret it fairly generously to asylum seekers. The difficulty is what the government can do about it, because Yvette Cooper has talked about, well, giving a steer to immigration judges mm-hmm. as to how they're to decide human rights cases. But that won't work, because any judge worth their salt is going to say, well, sorry, Yvette, I decide according to the law.
Rightly so.
And it's not your business yes. to tell me how the government would like me to decide. Well,
which
the case.
Is spot on, Andrew. Would that not be interference in the judicial process by the government?
Well, of course it is. But having said that, there is a case for saying that human rights have gone too far in the immigration situation. In the end, we may be faced with the necessity of rejigging our human rights system. Now, that is unpalatable to very large numbers of people, but less so as we go on. I don't know if listeners have noticed, but about 3 days ago, one highly intelligent Labour MP, Graham Stringer, broke ranks with Keir Starmer and said, actually, the interpretation of the Human Rights Convention in Strasbourg has somewhat got out of control. We should be prepared, if necessary, to face down Strasbourg and leave it if, in fact, it turns out that it's impossible to get yes. rid of failed asylum seekers in the way that we need to. So I think there is a movement, actually, and it's on the left as well yes. as the right.
The politics of it makes sense to me in the sense that the government is so desperate to say, look, we've tackled the backlog, look, we're deporting more people, that I think they would probably at this point go to almost any cost to be able to say that. But what if that cost, Andrew, is weakening judicial oversight of the government and weakening our human rights infrastructure? Is it worth it?
I think it might be. Obviously, I'm not saying that we would get rid of all human rights. Nobody wants that. But after all, many other countries have human rights systems that are not dependent on regional conventions. Ask an Australian, ask a Canadian. They're not countries which are hotbeds of fascism. They're not countries where people suffer particularly badly. They're not members of any human rights convention. There's no indication that if we introduced our own human rights system independent of Strasbourg,
yes.
we would suddenly become a hotbed of fascism.
Sure, but you can all but guarantee, can you not, that had this been announced 2 years ago when the Conservatives were in opposition, Keir Starmer would be leading the charge, that this was an appalling attack on human rights by a desperate Tory government, and the same charge...
Of course, Ben, you're quite right. Of course, Ben, you're absolutely
right. So there's a dose of sort of hypocrisy in this as well.
There's an enormous dose of hypocrisy in this. And, of course, at the moment, Keir Starmer is the roadblock to the government doing anything substantial about the immigration crisis. Because although quite a lot of the Labour rank and file quietly accept that something may have to be done about the human rights system, for the moment, Keir Starmer and his sidekick, Lord Hermer, who's the Attorney General,
yes.
are an absolute brick wall.
Well, two former human rights barristers, so you might imagine why they would have objections with this. Andrew, we've got to leave there. Really appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much indeed. Andrew Tettenborn is a writer and academic. Listening to that, Michael Bradley from the Stand Up to Racism group, which helped organise some of the counter demonstrations this weekend. Michael, very good morning to you. Let's just start briefly, if we could, before we come on to this new approach from the government with those demonstrations. Why was it so important for you to be out on the streets this weekend?
Well, I think what we want to show is that the vast majority of people in this country don't want to see a situation where people seeking who are escaping quite often really difficult situations in their home countries feel that they are being intimidated or targeted in a refugee accommodation. Many of these accommodation centres have families, many of these centres have people who have suffered trauma, and gone through experience of war and other issues, really. And the idea that we can have a situation where they're being targeted quite often by demonstrations at the heart of which are far-right organisations and violent organisations, we think it's important that people come out into the streets to show that people in this country don't agree with that kind of intimidation.
Let's just turn to the government's latest bid to try to get a grip on the asylum system, taking away the power of judges to uphold appeals on human rights grounds and instead appointing a commission of professional adjudicators to rule on these refugee cases, Michael. Would that be a good idea to speed up the processing?
I think the problem is they are watering down people's legal rights. international legislation around refugees came in actually predominantly after the Second World War to try to, as a response to the horrors of that conflict. We have to have, and as you know, many, many people win their cases on appeal.
But that's what's prompted this. I mean, when some of those people are, for example, an Albanian criminal whose deportation was halted because he argued that his son had an aversion to foreign chicken nuggets, that part of the reason at least, it's not hard to see why that system might be thought to be failing.
I think the vast majority of people are coming into Britain from very difficult circumstances, escaping poverty and war, and the idea that you water down their right to appeal or water down their right to put their point of view across, really, I think is simply a response by the government, which is running scared of the possibility of votes hemorrhaging to Reform UK, and it's not standing up to what Reform UK are saying with their talk of mass deportations and their encouragement of these demonstrations. Instead of that, they're desperately trying to do anything which appears to be tough on immigration. I think what it's doing is undermining people's legal rights.
Would you not say, Michael, that a judge that has stopped a deportation of a foreign criminal on the basis of chicken nuggets has lost the right to continue to rule on these sorts of cases?
I might have differences with many judges over their decisions at different stages, right, stuff. But I think in the present atmosphere, we're talking about a government which is desperately seeking solutions as quick as it possibly can to seem to be tough. Mm. It's not trying to talk about the actual way to tackle this, which is safe and legal passage for people seeking asylum. And actually, if you look at the kind of schemes that are coming in regard to people escaping the conflict in Ukraine, it shows you can have safe and legal routes and stuff around it, and that's what the government should be looking at.
Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Bradley from the group Stand Up to Racism. I've got to say, I understand the need to get the asylum backlog down, but on the specifics, on the principle of this, a government saying to the judiciary, we don't like the decisions you are making, therefore we are taking away your power to make them. If that doesn't make you a little bit uneasy, then I think you've become a bit complacent about the importance of the justice system in this democracy. The government should not be able to interfere in that way, should it? However much it might not like, and with good reason, some of the rulings that are being made. 0345 606 0973. To your calls on all of that, right after the news headlines, it's 7:16. Here's David Dom.
Former Labour Home Secretary Lord Blunkett says tackling the number of small boat crossings is beginning to get out of the government's grip. Campaigners are warning that plans to tackle violence against women and girls can only be effective if they address child sex abuse. It's being suggested nearly 800 cases of shoplifting have been going unsolved every day. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Do expect delays in West London again today as the Notting Hill Carnival continues. So lots of roads around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park all remain closed. Also, problems with the Charing Cross Road in central London. It's closed both ways between Cambridge Circus and Tottenham Court Road. It's all down to an accident. So all the buses that usually go that way are on diversion. In Mortlake, the Lower Richmond Road's closed both ways between Chalker's Corner and the High Street. And that's all down to an accident. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line between Acton Town and Uxbridge. And also C2C services are running a reduced service at Fenchurch Street.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
At This Vets, Mia's the owner, surgeon, rotor manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It's happening. happening. It's real. It's...
Oh,
it's,
not this again. What's happening?
Mini sale event. Financial contributions across the range.
Okay, take a break.
Even John Cooper Works models. And it's on top of all other offers.
Say that again.
There's no time.
The mini sale event. Breathtaking offers now until 8th of September at your local mini retailer. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by 31st of December 2025. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345
6060 973. 7:19 the time. Ben Kentish in for Nick Ferrari here on LBC this morning. Let's have a quick look at what's leading today's newspaper front pages. Starting with the Times newspaper, very much linked to the story we're discussing this hour. The government's latest bid to deport more failed asylum seekers. Not hard to see why when you look at the front page of the Times. Pressure grows for Prime Minister to get a grip on asylum claims. 7 out of every 10 voters say that Keir Starmer is mishandling the immigration crisis. 71% want him to do better, especially when it comes to asylum hotels, including, this is interesting, 56% of Labour voters. The Eye reports on the latest proposal. Channel migrants are in line to be first for fast-track asylum hearings as Cooper moves to close hotels. This new appeals process will aim to cut the number of hotels being used, but will take months to become operational, claims The Eye. The Guardian looks at another consequence of the growing toxicity, I would say, or anger, justified anger, perhaps you would say, inherent in this debate. MPs report sharp rise in online abuse over immigration debate. The level of harassment and death threats now being described as worse than during Brexit, which, my goodness, was pretty bad, wasn't it? The Daily Express has spoken to an Albanian people smuggler who claims that the small boats crisis is Labour's fault. Quite when we started caring about the political opinions of human traffickers, I'm not entirely sure. But that leaves the Daily Express. The Daily Telegraph looks at the latest on Ukraine. Trump cuts off Kyiv's long-range missiles. Donald Trump preventing Ukraine from firing long-range missiles into Russia in an effort to get Vladimir Putin to engage with peace talks. And both the Mirror and the Sun look at a story we will touch on a little later in the programme. Virginia Giuffre reportedly writing a book from the grave, is how the Sun puts it. Prince Andrew's sex abuse accuser, Andrew denies this, of course, Virginia Giuffre taking revenge from beyond the grave in a bombshell memoir. And it's the same on the front page of the Mirror. Jeffrey Epstein victims have branded Ghislaine Maxwell's tape on the pervert a whitewash. Virginia Jeffrey's book, they say, will be published this October. And that story leads the Daily Mail as well. Andrew facing bombshell new Epstein book. Last but certainly by no means least, the LBC website leading with a story we'll talk about from 8 o'clock. Thousands of criminals will avoid prison in a bid to tackle the overcrowding crisis. Instead, I can tell you, some of them will be banned from going to the pub. Is that justice? Does that sound like justice to you? More on that after 8. First, 7:22, Peter's calling from Stirling in Scotland, Peter, to talk about this latest crackdown on asylum claims by the Labour government. Thoughts? Morning.
Well, firstly, I'm angry. I mean, I would call him a gutless coward if that feels too kind. I also feel a certain amount of despair that a large portion of this country would either go along with stripping human rights and asylum seekers or stripping away human rights altogether. Now, I want listeners to consider that if we strip away the rights of asylum seekers, under UK law, we are saying they are not human. If we strip away human rights altogether, we are stripping away the right to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly and association.
Nobody's suggesting we're stripping away human rights altogether.
Well, it's been talked about a number of times. And this idea of replacing with a Bill of Rights under this country, that is incredibly fragile. I mean, we're already talking about a government trying to meddle in the judiciary now.
Yes, I take your point on that. But all they are saying here is, look, these judges have shown that they are interpreting the human rights law in a way that is clearly excessive. I mean, go back to that chicken nuggets example. There are more. They're not changing the actual law. They're changing who will be responsible for interpreting that law, because they say the current judges are getting it wrong.
So what we're doing is removing the goalpost because the current government and the current populist sentiment is unhappy. Now, democracy is an imperfect system. It always will be, and it has to be. There is no other way of answering that. If we were striving for a perfect system, it does not exist. It has never existed in human history, and it cannot exist. We have to accept the imperfections of the system, or we are going to go down a road that is going to be dark.
Why is having a panel of independent adjudicators, who these people will be, I don't know.
Who will decide these adjudicators?
So is your worry that if the government appoints the people who are deciding, then it stops becoming an independent process?
Well, look at what's happened in the US. I'm sorry, are you going to tell me that government-appointed judges, how has that gone? Look at the Supreme Court, look at the circuit court judges. Their justice system has become an absolute mockery, and it will be the same with these panels.
What if these panels were appointed independently somehow?
How would you find anyone independent at this point in the country?
Well, if you had some sort of regulator, I don't know, appointing them rather than the government, would that reassure you or not?
What would make them any more independent than the current system we have with the European Court?
Well, the judges aren't appointed directly by the government.
Right, but who appoints the European Court judges?
It's a very good question. It's the EU.
From what this strikes me...
No, it's not. It's a good question, actually, Peter. I don't know. I don't think it is the EU. It's a very good question.
Very clearly, and I don't have a clear answer myself there, but from what it strikes me is we want a British panel rather than a European panel, at which point you have to go, well, is this a matter of nationality then? Mm. In which case, that's a bit...
It's part of the EU that appoints them. It is the Council of Europe that appoints the ECHR judges. Peter, take your point completely. Is this undue, worrying government interference in what is supposed to be an independent process? If we lose the independence of the judiciary, even if it helps us deport more people, that's a pretty slippery slope to go down, isn't it? If the government can now start saying, we don't like the judge's decisions, therefore we're stripping of their powers. It does sound like, Peter, I think you're right, this the sort of thing that Donald Trump might say, not Keir Starmer. Appreciate the call, Peter. Lots more to come on this in just a moment. First, 7:26 the time. Forget the housing secretary. Should the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, now be referred to as the Houses Secretary? Why? Because she's now got three of them. She's come under fire this weekend after it was reported that she's added an £800,000 seaside apartment to the two properties she already owns in this country. Critics accusing her of hypocrisy, saying she warned against second homeowners pricing out the locals and has now become not a second homeowner, but a third one as well. Is that fair, or is she entitled, done well for herself, to buy as many properties as she likes? Ivan Lyons is a Conservative councillor in Brighton and Hove, where Angela Rayner has bought that £800,000 seaside apartment. Lovely part of the world, Ivan. Has she done anything wrong, sir? Morning.
Good morning. I don't have an objection, or we don't have an objection for her buying another property. But what we do have an objection is the hypocrisy of buying another property when at the same time stating, you know, only a couple of years ago that politicians should be held up, holding the highest standards of ethics and integrity. And in the meantime, Angela Rayner is currently hammering second home owners whilst also planning council tax increases. So we don't think she's actually being very straightforward and honest with the electorate.
Why is she not being honest, Ivan? What's dishonest about it? She's bought another home. You're right that they're putting up the second home tax and so on. She'll pay the full tax, presumably. So there's no hypocrisy there.
Well, she hasn't done anything exceptional. As you mentioned, she owns a house in a constituency and has now bought this lovely flat in Hove, which is overlooking the sea, and she's obviously entitled to do that. And I understand she also occupies a Grace and Favour government flat in Admiralty Arch. So what, as you may say, but why should she not own more than one home? Obviously left-wingers are entitled to expand their property portfolio, but at the same time, she's stated in the past that people shouldn't be buying more than one property, and also hammering those people who are trying to get onto the property ladder with excess taxes. You know, stamp duty went up massively in April. She's also part of the government that's looking to increase council taxes by more than 100%. So hardly helping with the housing issues and the crisis that we've got in the country.
I mean, there are a lot of Conservative MPs that own an awful lot more than three properties, Ivor, and that barely gets any attention whatsoever. Is part of this not that Angela Rayner grew up in a council estate in Stockport, has done really well for herself, and has now, as you say, got a nice little property empire for herself, if you can call two properties and a grace and favour apartment an empire? Is there not a degree of snobbery in the criticism towards her over this?
No, definitely not. As I mentioned, you know, we don't have any objections for people buying more than one property. That's what she wants to do. But let's not forget that just over a year ago, she publicly derided the then Chancellor Jeremy Hunt over his, and I quote, vast property empire before the 24 election.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot more than two homes, from what I understand.
I'm not his financial advisor or his accountant. So, but the principle is, what's fair for one shouldn't be fair for the others.
But there's a difference between having a second home, nice second home by the sea, and having quite a few that you're renting out, isn't there?
Yeah, but we're talking about a third property in this case. So, does she really need a third property? Saying that, perhaps, with Angela Rayner being down in Brighton Hove maybe one day a week or one day a month, local residents have been asking me, perhaps she can get the bins sorted out because most of the collections
the people of Birmingham will be desperately hoping she buys one up there as well. In that case, Ivan, good to have you with us. Thank you very much indeed, Ivan Lyons, Conservative councillor in Brighton and Hove. Let me know your thoughts on that. The housing secretary, she's got a nice house in her constituency. She's got a taxpayer-funded grace and favour flat in central London that she stays in. And now she's bought spent the best part of a million quid, 800 grand to be precise, on a lovely flat in a Victorian terrace by the sea down in Hove. Any objections to that? Is that hypocritical? Is that double standards, as Ivan and the Tories are claiming? 0345 6060 973, or is that absolutely her right? Working class girl done good, you might well say. Talk about that and lots more after the news headlines. 7:30 now the time. Here's David Dom.
A former Labour Home Secretary says tackling the number of small boat crossings is beginning to get out of the government's grip. Writing in a newspaper, Lord Blunkett says Sir Keir Starmer needs to be more radical in his approach. Campaigners are calling for the new strategy on dealing with violence against women and girls to address child sexual abuse as well. Charities including Bonanos and the NSPCC warning the two are inseparable. And it's being claimed 70% of UK consumers have been sent a scam message appearing to come from trusted sources like a bank or delivery firm. A survey is also showing more than half of them think AI was used in the attempt. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine, cloudy in the far west with rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like The Sports Agent. Join Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman as they take you inside the action as football returns for one of its biggest seasons yet. With last-minute winners, transfer sagas and behind-the-scenes secrets. You've seen it happen. Now find out why. The Sports Agent with Gabby Logan and Mark Chapman. Listen now on Global Player.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
7:33 is the time. I mean, talking of hypocrisy, The Conservatives having a pop at Angela Rayner for buying what is a second home, given that the one she owns in London is actually a government-owned one. That's the hypocrisy, isn't it? I mean, Jeremy Hunt there, as I put to Ivan, 7 buy-to-let properties, reportedly, in a development in Southampton, a nice pad in Pimlico, lovely house in Surrey, and he's not alone, by any means, on the Tory benches when it comes to owning multiple properties, and doing so also for business and for profit. Angela Rayner buying a little place by the sea she can escape to. They're crucifying her for it. That's the hypocrisy, isn't it? Am I missing something here? Is this the scandal that the Tories and the right-wing press are making out it is? Angela Rayner buying a flat by the sea? Or are the Tories the real hypocrites here for actually calling her out on it when so many of them own a hell of a lot more than 2 homes? 0345 60 60 973. Get your calls coming in on that. And do keep calling as well on the main story we're talking about this hour, talking of Angela Rayner, the Labour government cracking down on the use of human rights laws by refugees to avoid being deported if their refugee status is rejected. 0345 60 60 973. How much do you care about the human rights of people coming here as asylum seekers? Just before we do talk more about that, 7:34 the time, let's talk business. Anna McDonald joins me, investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management for the LBC Business News. Anna, very good morning to you. Let's start, shall we, with last autumn's budget. There were warnings at the time that the decision to put up taxes on small businesses would lead to job cuts, and so it's proved.
Yeah, there is a report today from both UK Hospitality and the British and Beer and Pub Association saying that the scale of job losses in their sector, the hospitality sector, is 3 times worse than was estimated by the Office of Budget Responsibility. And they're really calling out that the government needs to do something in the next budget to try and make life easier for the hospitality sector. The changes that we saw in the last budget, minimum wage going up a lot for younger workers and increasing national insurance contributions, means that about a third of what you spend when you go to the pub is tax.
Elsewhere, let's go stateside. Lots of speculation, Anna, about potential interest rate cuts by the Fed next month. Obviously, to some extent, that has a bearing on what happens here. What's the latest speculation?
Well, as you know, Fed chair is Jay Powell, and Trump calls him too late, Powell, because he thinks that he's dragging his feet on trying to encourage the rest of the board to cut interest rates. Now, the US, like the UK and other central banks, they have an eye on inflation, but they also think about the job market. And the fact that the job market seems to be a bit weaker in the US meant that last Friday he said, and this is policy wonk speech, baseline outlook and the shifting balance of risks may warrant adjusting our policy stance, i.e. we might be cutting rates, and the markets are now putting a 90% chance on that.
And back home, a bit of a row brewing between Wes Streeting, the health secretary, and some of the pharmaceutical companies. We had the news last week that the cost of some of the new fat loss jabs are going through the roof. Wes Streeting also unhappy about the prices of other drugs, Anna.
Yes. So there's a bit of a war of words, and it seemed to reach a bit of a stalemate, actually, on Friday. The pharmaceutical industry is saying that the NHS is trying to claw back too much of what they earn over above agreed limits. And that means that they're going to claw back too much, they're going to pay too little, and that they are all warning, the pharma sector saying this is going to threaten what is generally known as a pretty thriving life sciences sector that we have in the UK, because China, the US, they're all going all out to attract companies to invest and develop drugs there, and that means you do need to pay for them.
And last but not least, the amount that I get charged when I go down the shop to buy my spinach and my protein bar of Kia, right, in the morning, and forget to take a bag every single time, I'm going to be punished even more than I am now.
Yes, prices for plastic bags have gone up. But still, we're using more and more of them because we're getting deliveries and it's called the Ocado effect. So we're getting lots and lots of plastic bags in our deliveries. And so actually plastic bag sales are going up for the first time in a decade.
Anna, thank you very, very much indeed for your time this morning. Anna McDonald is investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management. 7:38 is the time. Tell you more in a moment about why boys are being left behind in the education system, according to one new report. First, though, Anders is on the line in Great Yarmouth to talk asylum. Anders, morning to you.
Good morning. I want to correct you on one thing, and one thing before we get going, and then maybe a couple of other things, because there's been a lot of falsehoods.
Go on. What do you think people have got wrong?
Nobody was deported because of chicken nuggets. That's an absolute falsehood, and it's a complete lie. I have that tribunal report in front of me, which I'm sure you have read in detail as well.
Go on.
And what it mentions is, with regards to what happened, is that we have a child... The situation is that we have a child with extreme learning difficulties mm-hmm. and sensory difficulties as well. Now, at an earlier assessment, this means that the child goes into fits, including hair pulling and hair ripping out, if it's presented with, for example, different foods that the child is not familiar with. Now, it was mentioned, chicken nuggets were mentioned in an earlier assessment. And so this is where the chicken nuggets nonsense comes up with. Now, a later assessment, a later review said that is not that is not justifiable reason alone.
Nobody said it was the only reason, Anders. It was part of the reason. It was part of the reason stated in the court documents.
Now, it was an early assessment. Now, it was mentioned, here's the thing, that as I just said, they mentioned chicken nuggets not because of its chicken nuggets, but because if this child is presented with foods that they're not familiar with, they go into a fit. Now, that's the truth, because of their severe learning and sensory difficulties. Now, that was then later rejected by the next panel that reviewed the case, and the case is now going up for further review to make sure to figure out exactly what to do, because in all of these instances, of course, if the child has the difficulties that we are discussing, then of course this child needs to be placed, the rights and or the needs of the child need to be carefully examined before anybody can be deported.
Why does that stop his father being deported? This is a man who was served 2 years in prison after being caught with £300,000 the proceeds of crime. So why on earth does he have the right to stay in the UK?
Well, it's like his case is still under review. It's not a question of that. And that's where we come back to this. That's where we come back to this issue with regards to the new tribunals. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with these new tribunals has nothing to do with human rights, and I'm going to reject that completely. The new tribunals are said to replace the older tribunal system, which is significantly underfunded and placing a huge backlog, probably intentionally, according to the previous government, as a deterrent factor. The problem with these new tribunals is that they're going to be staffed with people who are, let's say that they're non-judge judges, if that is the case. But we already have tribunals full of legally qualified people who are reviewing these cases. So the question is, what is this new tribunal if it's not a tribunal? Because here's the thing, even if it's not a court, the courts still have the right to review it. So you're not going to get around anything. All you're really doing is you have a car, you buy a new car, you don't fill it full of petrol, you don't do the tires, you don't do anything to it. You're amazed when this car breaks down after 5 years. So then you say, well, I'm going to buy a new car, and then I'm going to sort of drive around with this car because there's something wrong with this other car, even though you haven't really done anything to maintain it.
All right, Anders, appreciate it. Cool. Thank you very much indeed. Some very fair points in there, I think. Very, very fair points about who is going to appoint these panels and whether they will actually be able to speed things up, or whether they're simply adding another layer of bureaucracy that will just end up in the courts that we now have overturning the decisions of the panels that Labour wants to appoint. Thank you, Anders. Keep your calls coming in on that. 03456060973. How much concern do you have for the human rights of people coming here to claim asylum? 7:42 is the time. We had last week, did we not, the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, warning about the working class people being left behind, as she put it, by schools in this country. The government has betrayed working class white children, was her words. Boys, it seems, in particular, are being failed. That's according to a new report by the Centre for Policy Research, which finds that successive governments have turned a blind eye to the plight of boys in education, leading them at risk of poor grades and criminality. Let's talk to someone who helped write that report. Mark Brooks is the Director of Policy at the Centre for Policy Research on Men and Boys. Mark, very good morning to you. Just tell us more, if you would, about what you found.
Well, what we've found is that for over 30 years, boys have been behind girls educationally, and that continued with the A-level and GCSE results, T-level results last week. But also, we've started to look at what some of the outcomes of that is. So what we're finding at the moment is that we've got 200,000 young men who are unemployed. We've got nearly 500 young men in youth custody. We've got expulsions going going up to nearly 7,000 a year. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we're seeing 30,000 fewer 18-year-old boys in England going to university than girls this September, next month. So what we're seeing is that there is a continual outcome of poor educational attainment for boys relative to girls. And the issue is that what are the policies and what is the research actually telling us as to why that is? And then the key thing is that even if we took away all of the aspects around poverty, racial issues, where girls and boys live, at every single stage, boys would still be behind girls.
So there's something specifically about sex and gender that's going on.
Any thoughts or any suggestions as to what that is, Mark? What is it that is holding boys back or keeping boys back?
Well, some initial research carried out by a parliamentary report a couple of years ago started to look at issues such as low literacy, for example. So boys are going into school not reading and writing as much as girls, and they never catch up. Also, there is an issue around boys not being pushed hard enough, that boys actually being rewarded just for turning up rather than actually delivering decent quality homework. Also, there's an issue about boys not really understanding what the point of learning is. So they're going into school and they're thinking, what am I going to get out of this? And one of the things that a lot of educationists were telling us was that once boys see the point of learning, they will get their head down and actually work hard at school. But if they see no point, or they don't know what the purpose is, they won't work hard at school.
So obviously lots of food for thought for schools and the education system more broadly, Mark. But the point about boys starting school with a worse reading ability than girls, this is about parenting as well.
Oh, it's about the whole community. So certainly about parenting, certainly also about what's going on outside the school gates, whether the community that boys are in are really pushing and expecting boys to do really well as well. So this isn't just a school issue. This is a more societal issue. And also we need more organisations. We need increasing numbers of scouts, cadets, youth clubs, all of those sorts of things. So actually boys feel really, really positive about their life, but also that there's lots of organisations out there to support them.
Really interesting. Thank you, Mark. Mark Brooks is Director of Policy at the Centre for Policy Research on Men and Boys. It starts by getting more men into schools as teachers, doesn't it? If you go into a primary school where a tiny fraction on average of the staff are men, does that not send a message implicitly to boys that this isn't really a setting for you, that this is a place for women and girls to an extent? Is that not part of it? 0345 60 60 973, if you've got thoughts on that. Back to your calls as well on the state of our asylum system and Labour's plan to water down, that's the accusation, the human rights of migrants. Straight after news headlines at 7:46. David Dom.
Former Labour Home Secretary says the Prime Minister needs to give a comprehensive answer to tackling small boat crossings. Campaigners are calling for the new strategy on dealing with violence against women and girls to address child sexual abuse as well. And research says 70% of people have received things like fake text messages claiming to be from trusted companies and banks. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In West London, all the closures for the Notting Hill Carnival continue. The roads will stay closed until the early hours of tomorrow morning. So that's all the roads around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park. In the centre of town, Charing Cross Road is closed southbound from the Tottenham Court Road junction down to Cambridge Circus, but northbound has now reopened. In Mortlake, Lower Richmond Road is closed both ways after an accident. And in Barking, Linton Road is closed northbound because of an ongoing police investigation. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line between Acton Town and Uxbridge, and also minor delays on the Central line.
This is LBC.
Wake up, it's new bedroom time, because there's more to rent than kitchens. And with our new bedroom packages starting at just £499, everyone can have the style they've been dreaming of. Designed and delivered by experts you trust within 7 days. Visit your local Rent showroom or go online to find out more. And join the great renovation.
LBC.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that?
Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back. So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result! Love this shot of them driving the boat. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
7:50 is the time. Ben Kentish in for Nick Ferrari here on LBC at breakfast this morning. Very good morning if you're just joining us here on the programme. Tell you more in a couple of minutes' time about the latest book that will have Prince Andrew, I was going to say sweating, well, he claims he can't, can he? But let's say keeping Prince Andrew up at night. It's not one he will want to have released, I'll tell you that. Give more details in a moment. First, Gilbert's calling from Colchester in Essex to talk about the story we were just discussing, Gilbert, about boys foiling behind girls at school. Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. Well, it's great to be on the radio about this because this is my topic. Last week I made the video about boys in the GCSEs, and it's a big scandal. Boys fall behind in 83% of all the topics in the GCSEs, and that's not mentioned. If you read The Guardian or something, they say, well, you know, it's all not so bad, it gets better. It's not, and it has been like this for many years. And I'm doing research on it as a psychology professor. I know Mark Brooks, who you just had on the, okay, on the program, who is great. I've been contributing to the parliamentary discussion.
Oh, we'll right, get so you on next time, Gilbert.
Well, you should. Yeah, well, I'm at the University of Essex. We do research on this. Look at my YouTube channel called Psy Toolkit. I made a video about it so people can see the details of last
year. This is really your bread and butter. This is your expertise. We know the problem. What's causing it in your experience, Gilbert? Why are boys falling behind?
Mark Brooks already mentioned it because he had, of course, worked on the parliamentary material. So one big thing is that boys and girls, they develop biologically slower. So, for example, a one-year-old girl, knows more words than a one-year-old boy. And it's even the case that a boy of a highly educated mother knows fewer words than a mother with somewhat lower education who has a girl. Do you get me? So people sometimes say, oh, it's all due to education and how that's not true. But so there's a biological factor.
So that is purely a biological genetic factor rather than about parenting and socialization and how we treat baby boys and how we treat baby girls, Gilbert. It's natural.
Part of it, the literacy, we cannot. Boys catch up when they get older. So there's so when they, you know, they reach the age of 18. But the problem is in schools, they just can't help that they're slower with developing their literacy skills, and we can support them. Of course, we can do more. And of course, you know, we know, for example, there's a huge gap generally between children from low socioeconomic and high socioeconomic status. So how much you earn, how much education the parents have had, generally plays a role, but it doesn't explain why, for example, also boys from highly educated, wealthy families who can invest in their children because they have the money, it still doesn't help them. And I've been, for example, we have published about this. I was always amazed. So journalists like yourself, they came to me and they say, I'm really worried about you. I want to have you on BBC Newsnight, for example, because we have boys, in our family and we don't know what's going on. And I must say, there's an issue with many woke researchers at universities not wanting to talk about it.
Why is it unwoke to talk about boys falling behind? Because boys are seen as privileged still.
Absolutely. Right. So people keep talking about the patriarchy, which is a big issue. The patriarchy doesn't exist anymore. We live in a modern society.
I just personally dispute that, Gib. I think it does exist, but that's not to say that there aren't all sorts of ways in which boys fall behind and that men struggle more in certain areas. Doesn't mean there isn't still a patriarchal society. In my view, we'll agree to disagree on that. Great to have an expert on the boys' element. Thank you so much, Gilbert. Hopefully we'll speak again on that very, very soon. Gilbert calling there from Colchester. 7:54 is the time. I told you Prince Andrew is not going to be happy this morning. Fresh off the back of an incredibly damning biography that's been published of him in the last few weeks. Another book that he really, I'm sure, would rather wasn't being written or hadn't been written, should I say. This is Virginia Giuffre, the sex trafficking victim who, you'll remember, accused the Duke of York of sex crimes, which he denies, took her own life, very sadly, back in April, but has reportedly written an autobiography, which, according to the newspapers this morning, will be published posthumously this autumn. Talk more about that in a moment. Separately, though, this weekend, we saw the release of audio recordings of US Justice Department interviews with Ghislaine Maxwell. This is the moment, I mean, listen to this, that she denied ever introducing Jeffrey Epstein to Prince Andrew.
It would never have occurred to me to introduce him. I couldn't imagine them being friends. Two chalk and cheeses would never, I mean, for real, there's nothing there to connect them.
But we know they did become connected, and according to that new biography, they became pretty close. What will this new book reveal that we didn't know already? Alexander Larman is a journalist, author of Windsors at War and Crown in Crisis. I mean, to say it's been a torrid few years, Alexander, for Prince Andrew would probably be putting it too mildly. It's just gone from bad to worse.
Good morning, Ben. Yes, I think what the important thing is to say from the outset is that this is so much worse, Prince Andrew, than the release of the recent biography, because the Andrew Lowney biography entitled, there's a lot of quite wild claims in that book, some of which obviously can be substantiated, some of which have already had to be removed from the book. So what I think that Prince Andrew would have hoped for that is to sit there, let the storm pass, let it all wash over and get back to normal. This he can't do, because obviously he still has the option of suing Dr. Lowney in court if he decides that it's too outrageous. But now that Virginia Giuffre is far beyond the reach of any jurisdiction, the claims will stand by themselves. And obviously what was so interesting is that when he agreed this very generous financial deal with her, this out-of-court settlement, which is believed to have been as much as £10 million, it was all done with the idea that she would not be able to put anything into the public domain. But now that she's dead, it's literally published and be damned, because everything that's happened between the two of them will be in this book. Now, of course, he and his representatives might deny that it happened, but given that I would say 99.9% of your listeners would believe that he had a relationship with her, all that's going to happen is that this is going to absolutely substantiate everything that we believe. And the question then is, what on earth do the royal family do? Because I think that they are in the very difficult position right now of wanting him gone, of wanting him not to be part of the royal family anymore. But there is no mechanism that exists in any kind of constitution for simply banishing somebody, for simply stripping them of their royal birth. Because until the day he dies, he will be the son of the late queen. So you can't just send somebody off into reputational Siberia. But make no mistake, I mean, when the book comes out in October, it's going to be absolutely devastating.
In terms of what might be new in this book, Alexander, I mean, Virginia Giuffre had done interviews before. She'd spoken openly about her side of the story in terms of Prince Andrew. Would you expect there to be new revelations, new information?
I would, yes. I mean, I'd expect it to be much more detailed, because obviously she's been working with this journalist, I think her name's Amy Williams, to have put the book together. And, I mean, given that the publisher paid a sum well into the millions, they would have known it was dynamite, and they would have known there's going to be more material than she came out with in previous interviews. Because actually, if you look at what she said, she talked about the relationship with Andrew, she talked about the fact that she was trafficked by Epstein, but it's quite short on detail. And I think for what this is going to supply, it's an almost, I mean, I don't know this, of course, but I would assume there'll be an almost forensic level of detail that will go into what happened, where it happened, blah, blah, blah. And of course, the terrifying thing for Andrew is that he's already got no public standing. He's already got absolutely, people think he is a criminal. People think he's committed all of these crimes. And this is essentially going to be the smoking gun. So it's not just for him, but what do the wider royal family do?
He's obviously denied all these allegations, Alexander. Is there any prospect that after this book he faces any sort of legal action, you think?
It's impossible to say. I mean, it's that, he hasn't faced any legal action hitherto. I mean, the fact that he settled the case out of court before going to... Because if he had given testimony and it had gone against him and he'd been found to commit perjury, then obviously legal action would have ensued on that score. So that, you can see, is a possible reason why the case was settled out of court. But yes, I mean, he denies all allegations, he hasn't been arrested, etc., etc., etc. But the court of public opinion is certainly going to be very, very firmly against
him. And in some ways, it's the harshest one. Thank you very much, Alexander. Alexander Lahman, journalist, author of Windsors at War, Crown in Crisis. He'll want to get his hands on those proofs as early as he can, won't he? Thank you, Alexander. Coming up after the news at 8 o'clock, we're going to look in detail at the latest government proposal to spare thousands of prisoners. Criminals going to prison, instead punishing them potentially with bans from the pub and football matches. Is that really justice? And is that a good idea, or an absolutely terrible, terrible way to go about punishing people for criminal wrongdoing? Talk more about that after news headlines at 8 o'clock.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. A former Labour Home Secretary says tackling the number of small boat crossings is beginning to get out of the government's grip. Writing in a newspaper, Lord Blunkett says Sir Keir Starmer needs to be more radical in his approach. More than 28,000 people have made the journey across the English Channel so far this year, as the government have announced plans to speed up the appeal process. Writer and law professor Andrew Tettenborn has told Ben backbenchers are growing equally frustrated.
Keir Starmer is the roadblock to the government doing anything substantial, because although quite a lot of the Labour rank and file quietly accept that something may have to be done about the human rights system, for the moment, Keir Starmer and his sidekick Lord Hermer, who's the Attorney General, are an absolute brick wall.
Charities have written to the government to raise concerns over the upcoming strategy to tackle violence against women and girls. Organisations including Barnardo's and the NSPCC say it can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sexual abuse. The government says the new strategy will include targeted action to tackle child sexual exploitation and abuse, as well as other crimes. Figures show nearly 290,000 cases of shoplifting across 12 months to March went unsolved. Data obtained for the Liberal Democrat shows across 2024-25 in England and Wales, over half failed to identify a suspect. It's claimed over 70% of consumers in the UK have received a scam message that appears to come from a trusted source, like a bank or delivery firm. Research says more than half of those targeted believe AI-generated voices and images were used. LBC's tech correspondent Will Guyot says being targeted is now inevitable.
It is the cost of being online. There are now so many things being thrown at you as a person with tons of things demanding your attention. It is a matter of time before something like this happens to you.
Bus passengers could be banned from playing loud music under proposals set out by the Conservatives. They want to put forward changes to a bill which is currently going through Parliament. The Tories also think rail passengers could benefit from a tougher enforcement of existing rules. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK today with plenty of sunshine, cloudy in the far west, rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted, so you can get on with your day. Walkies it is then. Just Ask Once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details, vodafone.co.uk/network.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 8:03. You are listening to me, Ben Kentish, in for Nick Ferrari here on LBC this morning. Very good morning if you're just turning on the radio and joining us here on the programme. This hour, I will give you the quite staggering number of shoplifting cases that are going unsolved every single day in this country as police chiefs are accused of passing the buck onto us, the British public, plus pressure on the Labour government again, as it emerges that their violence against women and girls strategy won't include violence against girls. Give the details of that in about half an hour time. First, though, imagine this, would you? Imagine this. You finally get your day in court because you've been the victim of a crime. Maybe you've been burgled by a prolific burglar, or you've been assaulted by someone with previous convictions, maybe been injured by somebody driving under the influence or driving dangerously. Whatever the offence may be, quite a serious one. You get your day in court, you go along and you watch as the person who put you through that trauma is sentenced to time in prison. Good, you might well think. Except, as they are sentenced to time in prison, the judge says, well, usually I would have given you 2 years, but as things stand, I'm going to give you less than a year, even though you probably should have got 2 years because our prisons are full. But... in place of that extra year in prison, I am going to do something equally tough and equally harsh. I am going to ban you from going to the football or heading out for a pint down your local or even going to a gig, if that's your thing. This is not some sort of bizarre courtroom television drama. This is now, or soon to be, government policy. Because according to changes being made by the Labour government that are coming into force next month, will be introduced in Parliament, I should say, next month, judges will be able to ban criminals from football matches, pubs and concerts in place of giving them longer prison sentences. So these are people who will go to prison, and when they are released on probation, there will be stricter or more stringent conditions attached. If the judge decides that is appropriate, that is the power that they will be given under the changes that are being implemented in the sentencing bill. I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound a lot to me like justice. When my family were burgled, someone in my family was burgled, and they went to prison for a very, very small number of months, I don't think I would have felt reassured had I known that actually they were serving even less time, but they wouldn't be going down Wembley Arena or the O2 anytime soon to see their favourite band. Is that really justice? Look, I get the prisons are full. I get we've got to be a bit creative here. Pub bans? Not being able to go and watch Barnet away at Cheltenham like I did on Saturday? That's not punishment if you're a Barnet fan. That's reprieve. That's respite. Not going to the football, not going to the pub, not going to gigs. Is that really the sort of punishments we want to be meeting out? Or does that sound an awful lot to you like soft justice? 03456060973, the number for your thoughts on that. Is it just the inevitability, given the state of our prisons? Let's talk to Cassia Rowland about it, senior researcher at the Institute for Government, with a particular focus on the criminal courts and prisons. Cassia, very good morning to you. What do you make of this idea?
I think it's really interesting to see the government taking some new approaches, to be honest. As you've mentioned, a really serious situation in prisons at the moment. We just haven't got the space. And I was quite critical earlier in the year that they weren't kind of doing enough, making big enough changes. So I'm actually really pleased to see some of the changes they're making to really tackle that and take it seriously. On the bans around kind of attending the football, going to the pub, things like that, the real challenge, I think, is we do have these orders at the moment, but only for certain kinds of offences. So you can be banned from going to the football if you've been involved in hooliganism or violence.
Which makes sense. But this would be, like, you're done for drink driving and you suddenly can't go to watch your favourite band perform down the road.
Exactly.
It's not related.
And I think what made football banning orders seem pretty effective is that connection between the punishment and the crime. And it makes a lot of sense to people. Whereas I think if suddenly you're saying, oh, well, for this shoplifting offence that you've committed, I'm going to ban you from driving. People think, well, hang on. Yeah. Like, what's the connection there? So I think there'll need to be some quite careful implementation and thinking about what specific guidelines are in place around when these sentences can be imposed and things like that. But in general, I think taking serious steps is really needed to manage the situation.
I hear you completely, Cassie, because I mean, at this point, almost it's not a choice. There is no prison space available. And we need to find ways to punish people that involves not going to prison, punish them in the community. I'm all for that. I'm all for, you know, community service, people picking litters and litter up and doing real hard work for a long, long time as a punishment. Not being able to go to the pub, while I appreciate for many of us would be, you know, a negative impact on our lives, it's hardly really a punishment, is it? I mean, it just feels to me incredibly soft, this.
I think a lot depends on the kinds of sentences, the kinds of offences, sorry, that these sentences are being imposed for. So if it is a pretty low-level offence, you know, it's not like a really serious burglary.
But if it was that low-level, you wouldn't have been going to prison in the first place, presumably.
That is often the case. Sometimes you get, if people are really prolific offenders, you know, maybe this is their 40th, their 50th offence.
Yes.
Some of those people will be being sent to prison, I think, because people feel that sentences, you know, magistrates and judges feel that they don't know what options are available to them, and that kind of existing sentences don't work. Whether these are going to be kind of the silver bullet that change that, I'm not sure. But I think taking a kind of slightly out of the box approach is worth doing to see if it can improve the situation.
Understood. Just lastly, how do you enforce it? How do you enforce somebody being banned from going to the pub? I mean, a landlord's going to have lists and photos of people in the local area who are out on parole who aren't meant to be having a pint. It just seems to me completely unenforceable, Katia.
I think the only way to make it work is with really extensive electronic tagging, right, so that you are kind of monitoring people's locations. And it's not, because as you say, you know, if you give the bartender a list, or, you know, throw these people out if they come in over the next 2 weeks or 2 months, right, that's not going to be practical. But it would need to be, I think, electronically monitored. And there are real questions about whether the probation service, which is responsible for overseeing those tagging orders.
Yes.
And manage that.
You need people monitoring the information the tags are providing and then responding to it. You know, sending the SWAT teams, they've gone for a pint. That's not really going to be what happens, is it? Chances are they'll take the risk, they'll chance it, and nothing will happen. Cassia, thank you. Cassia Rowland, senior researcher at the Institute for Government with a particular focus on the criminal courts and prisons. This to me just sounds completely barking mad. What about you? 0345 6060 973, not to mention utterly unenforceable, isn't it? Let's talk to Darren in Ipswich, who is, I believe, a former prisoner. Darren, morning to you.
Morning.
What do you make of this idea? I mean, I presume you would have rather been banned from the pub than gone to prison.
Yeah. Well, basically what I'd say is this, is that, look, the whole of society realises that something needs to change. And obviously stronger deterrents are needed. However, just at the end of that, as the other lady was saying, the only way this can be monitored is by electronic tagging. And basically, what I see from this is just another way the government can basically tag people. Like you say, I mean, if these people aren't that much of a risk that they're not going to go to prison. I mean, so like, for me, if you're committing a crime that deserves for you to go to prison, then you go to prison. Mm-hmm. And if you're an ex-offender who's been released from prison, and you've proved your rehabilitation to the point where you can be released from prison, why do you then need extra supervision? You're either ready to go into the community or you're not. This is literally just about the fact that there's a failing prison system that's overcrowded, underfunded, and basically at the point of breaking. So what they're trying to do is not send people to prison and obviously put extra pressure on the probation service, which we all know is already underfunded, undermanned, overworked, and basically just trying to pass the book on to somebody else.
And there's a slight double standard here, because prison is the point of prison is to keep dangerous criminals away from the public and to send people to somewhere where they will genuinely face an unpleasant time and a real punishment for their crimes. I have a little, on a sort of principle level, Darren, a little bit of a worry about the state being able to dictate not just whether or not you go to prison, but where or where you can't go day to day. Okay, you're not a threat to the public, you can be let out, but no, you can't go and see your mate, or no, you can't go to the pub, or no, I know you've got tickets for that gig, but you're not going to... It's a bit authoritarian, it's a bit draconian, isn't it?
That was the word I was going to use. So let's have a look at the state of society at the moment. We already see a decrease in the freedom of speech. So you mentioned earlier about, you know, people going to courts and everything else. So we're seeing people going to court and going to prison for posting something on Facebook, which, you know, they might post something about...
It depends what it is, if you've incited racial hate.
Yeah, of course. I don't understand that. But, I mean, we see more and more now, you know, how people are going to prison for, you know, a lack of freedom of speech, or, you know, if we go back in time...
I don't want to go too down that path. I personally don't think that things like inciting racial hatred, I don't think that comes into free speech.
No, I'm not going down that road. What I'm saying is the authoritarian argument in the fact that, you know, it is just another way. So the government will bring in this as a deterrent, but then where does it stop?
Yes.
Do you understand? So, yeah. So
because the next step is...
You committed a driving offence, so now we're going to tag you.
Yep.
And we're not going to let you go to a football match with your son or your daughter, who obviously are a great fan of football. So now we're going to take that part of your life away from you because you got caught speeding twice or you did this or you did that. And we don't want to send you to prison because we've not got a place for you. So I'm total agreement with you on that aspect.
Because it's where does it go? I mean, you know, yes, you can't go to the football with your son or daughter. The next step is, well, actually, we're going to stop you seeing your son and daughter as a punishment. Or actually, we're going to ban you from seeing your friends for a few months. Or actually, you know what, we're going to take your television away. Or we're going to impound your car. Once the state starts to say, we have the right to dictate what you do day to day, even after you leave prison, to that extent, I just worry, maybe I'm overthinking this, but I just worry that is a really slippery slope. To the state, the government, the courts being able to impose all sorts of restrictions on any area of our life that they deem to be fit. Darren, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very, very much indeed. What do you make of this? Is this a good idea to free up space in our prisons? Dare I say, save an awful lot of money as well. Or banning criminals from going to the football and the pub? Does that, you with me, that doesn't really sound a lot like real justice, does it? 0345 606 0973. Talk lots more about that after the news headlines. It's 8:16. Here's David Dom.
The former Labour Home Secretary, Lord Blunkett, has said the government's efforts on migration and small boats have so far been a failure. Charities say the government must properly address child sex abuse if it's serious about reducing violence against women and girls. Data shows shoplifting offences result in someone being charged in less than one in five cases. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in West London. Definitely do expect delays again today as the Notting Hill Carnival continues. All the road closures are in place until the early hours of tomorrow morning. So that's roads around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park. In central London, the Charing Cross Road remains closed southbound at Tottenham Court Road, and in Mortlake, Lower Richmond Road stays closed both ways because of an accident. In Barking, Linton Road is closed northbound, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line. This is between Acton Town and Uxbridge, but better news on the Central line. Those delays have now cleared.
This is LBC.
Say hello to Deliveroo's Fridge Filler Mondays. Woo-hoo! Each Monday, enjoy 50% off selected fresh and chilled groceries from your favourite supermarkets. Order ingredients for a big breakfast, the soul-stirring stir-fry, or your five-a-day for the next 5 days. Deliveroo's Fridge Filler Mondays now just got even better. Selected partners only. Geographical restrictions, customer eligibility and fees apply. Subject to availability. See deliveroo.co.uk/terms for offer T's and C's.
This is LBC.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist.
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville. Made to be enjoyed, not endured.
A frozen berry blast, please.
Love. Do you know what I've done?
Now, what have you done?
You see Pete sleeping over there? I got the sun cream and I've only gone and drawn it on his back.
I love it. Oh, but that's not Pete.
Isn't it?
Oh, very funny.
Avoid having the wrong kind of fun in the sun. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1, including sunglasses, from £70 with single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked, either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
At SSE Energy Solutions, we know businesses are full of different kinds of energy.
Like your fourth coffee of the morning energy.
Your yes, chef energy. And even as per my last email energy. You can bring any energy you like to your business. But at SSE Energy Solutions, we bring simple, affordable energy. Choose SSE Energy Solutions, a different kind of energy.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Hey, 20 to the time, it's David on WhatsApp. Ben, what if you hate football and are completely teetotal? Happy days. This is the point, isn't it? Is this really going to be a proper punishment? The judge, I order you by command of to not go to the pub for 2 weeks. I mean, criminals are laughing at the justice system right now, aren't they? Absolutely laugh. We used to send people to prison for these offences. Now we stop you going out for dinner with your family. Honestly, I'm all for, you know, I'm not a sort of lock them up and throw away the key person by any means, but justice has got to be done and seen to be done. And if you are the victim of crime, as I've been, and most of us, I think, by this point have probably been, and you know that the perpetrator responsible for that crime against you hasn't gone to prison, or has gone to peer prison for half the time they should have gone to prison, and has been let out with restrictions on which music venues they can go to, and an instruction that they have to sell the tickets they've got to see Oasis because they're banned from going to concerts. I don't think you think that feels like justice, do you? I think you think it feels, frankly, quite pathetic and a bit offensive to you as the victim of that crime. So yes, fine. Send fewer people to prison, find other tough ways to punish them in the community. You know, make them wear high-vis jackets and pick litter for the next year, unpaid. Fine, all for that sort of thing. We've got to free up some prison spaces, I get it. Bans on going for a pint with your mates? Doesn't sound like justice to me, but what about you? 0345 6060 973. Harry's on the line in Waltham Forest this morning. Morning, Harry.
Morning, Ben.
It's a joke, isn't it, this? I just think it's absurd.
It is. I totally agree with you. I mean, how on earth will you enforce it?
Well, our expert, Cassie, was saying you'd have to have loads of tags and loads of people monitoring the tags and getting a big flashing red light if somebody decided to go and watch a gig or a football match. I mean, it's a very fair point, Harry. I don't know.
Even if they couldn't remove the ankle tags, or they could, you know, not disable them, if it flagged up on someone's monitor that they're down the pub,
yeah,
will the police ever turn up to arrest them? I don't think so.
I mean, they don't turn up when the actual crime's committed. Imagine ringing 111. The bloke who burgled me last year is currently sitting having a gin and tonic at the pub. Come down, the police laugh you out of town.
Yeah, it's absolutely nonsense. What they need to do, the trouble is, this is the socialist way. We don't have criminals in this country. We have zero criminals. What do you mean? We have thousands of poor, oppressed victims of a callous society. That's what we have.
Is that your view, Harry, or that's what you think other people think?
This is my view. This is why the socialists think. You know, they're all poor, oppressed victims. We're the callous ones. But what they need to do is they need to reintroduce the fear factor. There is no fear. No fear of the police, no fear of authority, no fear of prison.
That's very true. I don't think that's true of all criminals, but it's very true of some of them. But then what's the alternative? If even prison isn't seen as a proper punishment, then what's the alternative? How do we punish people?
The trouble is prison isn't seen as a proper punishment because the sentences they give out are Mickey Mouse sentences. Yeah, the minimum term for anything other than a very minor crime should be 3 years. No remission. 3 years straight off.
I don't know if I agree with you on principle, Harry, but even if I did, practically, prisons are full. Even if I wanted us to do what you're proposing, we can't because we just haven't got enough space as it is.
Well, what we need to do is we need to deport all the foreign prisoners we have to make some space.
Deport them to where?
Well, back to their own countries.
What if they've got the right to live here still? What if they've got British citizenship?
That they've abused their citizenship, we take it away and send them back.
It's not that easy, is it? It's not that easy, practically. It's not. It's not that easy, legally.
All it requires is backbone. That's all it requires.
But it also requires the country you're deporting them to agree to take them back.
No, you just take them back and dump them there. No,
you have to have the permission of the government.
Well, they don't ask for permission to send their criminals to us.
All right, so all the Brits that have committed crimes and are in prison overseas, those governments should just dump them at Heathrow, should they?
Well, this is the other side of the coin. We have to take our own rubbish back.
So you would say yes.
We put them inside.
Right, but that's not going to free up any prison cells, is it, Harry? Because all the people in prison overseas are going to come back here. So even if you've deported all the foreign ones, you haven't actually freed up any space.
Well, the thing is, initially, the prison population would increase with the increased sentences.
Wait, but Harry, I mean, but so once
the criminal fraternity realise that you are serious about sentencing, and they will go away for years with no remission.
You think the people that could...
The population will go down.
I don't think so. I think they'd still take the gamble, to be quite honest with you. I think a lot of them are making quite crazy amounts of money from it. If it's the choice between that and actually being sent to prison, which, given the state of our police service right now, and we'll talk about this in a moment, is pretty slim, I'm not convinced that the entire criminal fraternity, as you put it, suddenly balks, turns around and goes, oh, my God, how do we get back on the straight and narrow? Harry, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Indeed, talking of criminality being rampant and out of control, should we talk about shoplifting? Let's do that. 8:26 is the time. It's been revealed today that 800 shoplifting cases in this country are going unsolved every single day as one police chief comes under fire for suggesting that it's on the public rather than the police officers to get a grip of this problem. This is the Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley, who has claimed that members of the public need to do more to challenge shoplifters in their community rather than relying on police officers. Let's talk about both of those stories with Joshua Reynolds, Liberal Democrat MP for Maidenhead, who has revealed the 800 shoplifting cases a day going unsolved. Joshua, very good morning to you. What's your response to your own finding about the sheer scale of criminality that people are getting away with?
Well, it is these shameful figures that really show that the police are failing to crack down on the shoplifting epidemic that is facing our country. And whilst the Conservative police chiefs then say it's up for the public to do that, I worked in retail for a number of years and I know how dangerous it can be to confront shoplifters where you don't know what their reaction will be. Will they be aggressive? Will they be abusive? Will they have a knife on them? So that's why, as Liberal Democrats, we've been very clear, it's for the police to protect us rather than to pass the buck. It's time to scrap the Police and Crime Commissioners, and it's time to invest that money into frontline community policing.
It's easy to say, Joshua, isn't it? But if I had a police officer sitting here, and hopefully some will call it, they would say, what other areas of crime do you want us to divert attention away from? Is it the murders? Is it the rapes? Is it the domestic violence? Is it the terrorism? What is it to focus on people nicking from shops?
That's where we've seen since 2015 the massive decline in police numbers across the country. That's the Conservatives' shameful legacy, it really is. Which is where we're saying we want to take that money from the Police and Crime Commissioners and reinvest that as Liberal Democrats into that community frontline policing, local officers,
Oh, Joshua, we're losing your line.
Who know their patch, who know the shop workers, stop that lawless high street.
But even then, I mean, there are so many, I'm not to diminish the significance of shoplifting for a moment, but there are so many other areas of crime, burglary, threat, burglary, theft, violence against women and girls, the list goes on and on and on, that are crying out for more police attention. Even if you have more officers, those areas of crime are going to come ahead on the priority list of shoplifting, aren't they? And frankly, rightly so. I fear we've lost Joshua. Joshua, with us? No, we've lost Joshua. That was Joshua Reynolds, a Liberal Democrat MP for Maidenhead. I wanted to get his response. I mean, give me your response, if you would, on this police and crime commissioner in Thames Valley claiming the public needs to do more. The public, us, to stop the... I mean, is that not just a spectacular exercise in passing the buck and shifting responsibility? Have we really got to the point? The answer is yes, we have. Where the police are now saying shoplifting's not on us, it's the people, it's the public who need to do more to stop it. Pathetic. I mean, even if that's the reality, because the police just can't cope with this epidemic, which is it is. Don't say it out. Don't say, well, we can't do it. It's on you. If you're down your local supermarket and someone's nicking things, it's on you. If you're in Thames Valley, apparently, to do something about it. What's vigilante justice the police are now advocating for? Crazy how we got in this mess. At the same time, the government says, oh, well, you commit a crime, yeah, maybe not prison for you, or maybe we'll cut your sentence and just stop you going to the pub instead. These things are linked, aren't they? Harry was right. There has to be a fear of the consequence. And if you know that you get done for a potentially serious enough crime that it used to warrant a prison sentence, but instead you're just going to be stopped from going to the football, you crack on, don't you? 0345 6060 973. More of your calls to come on that in just a moment. Plus, that's woken you up this bank holiday Monday, isn't it? What a this is crazy. This is a genuinely story. It's not April Fool's Day. That is an AI rap video posted last night by Reform UK leader Nigel Farage, which shows him, as you've guessed it, rapping. He says it's a bit of fun, but is there a political strategy behind these digital stunts that Reform seems to be pumping out more and more of? Discuss that in just a moment. 8:30 is the time. Let's get the latest news headlines first with David Dom.
Former Labour Home Secretary Lord Blunkett says more action is vital to get a grip of the number of small boat crossings. More than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel so far this year. Charities say the pledge to tackle violence against women and girls can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sex abuse. Organisations like Barnardo's and the NSPCC have written to ministers over concerns its strategy doesn't include child sexual exploitation. And it's being claimed Royal Mail and Evri are now the top brands being copied by scammers. Research says 70% of people have received things like fake texts claiming to be from trusted companies and banks. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine, cloudy across the far west with rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Wake up, it's new bedroom time, because there's more to rent than kitchens. And with our new bedroom packages starting at just £499, everyone can have the style they've been dreaming of. Designed and delivered by experts you trust within 7 days. Visit your local rent showroom or go online to find out more. And join the great renovation.
The new Big Arch has arrived at McDonald's. A burger so iconic, it's got its own sauce. A signature Big Arch sauce. Sounds serious, doesn't it? It is. Seriously good. Big Arch. The big McDonald's hunger. Until 9th of September, from 11 a.m, participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
And now the weather. Scattered showers will give way to more scattered showers, but there may be a period in between where it's just grey. It's always grey, isn't it? That's why I travel with Monzo. I can use my card to spend abroad with no fees, so I can plonk myself on a beach far away from grey and spend with my Monzo card like I never left home. Hello, Beach Bar. Now to Liam for the sport. Monzo, the bank made for travel. UK residents, T's and C's apply.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution.
Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
8.33 is the time. Here's Dalton from Bournemouth. This is absolutely ridiculous, Ben. This isn't punishment. It won't stop criminals. They will find something. I don't disagree for a minute with you, Dalton. This is not proper justice, is it? Yes, punish people in the community. It's got to be a proper punishment. Someone here says make them build the new prison. Well, I'm actually not opposed to that. I mean, I know it sounds a bit Soviet, kind of hard labour, but as long as they're treated respectfully and as long as, you know, they're not sort of tied in chain gangs and so on, actual punishment has got to be the deterrent and it's got to be the thing that will stop people committing crimes, not pub bans. 0345 6060973. Are we missing something, Dalton and I? Is this a better idea than I'm making it out to be? Because the government thinks this is the solution. This is the way to free up prison space. I am far from convinced. But what about you? Paul's calling from Leicester to talk not so much about this, Paul, but about shoplifting.
Ben, morning.
Morning.
My blood pressure and heart rate has just gone through the roof. Have I just heard this right? The PCC for Thames Valley is advising members of the public to, inverted commas, get involved in shoplifting or trying to apprehend...
Not get involved in shoplifting, Paul. That's something quite different.
People that have committed the offence, but trying to stop them.
Yes.
So, just to give you a bit of context, obviously, just my opinion, I spent 10 years in a Midlands force as a response police officer. I've got, you know, sort of skin in the game of dealing with shoplifters. The old £200, anything less than that, we're not interested. You know, the frustration from my point of view that used to be when I was a uniformed officer, going into, say, I don't know, a local supermarket, a co-op, where they're stealing items. You know, these people frequent it every single day. They have, you know, a criminal record as long as their arm. And they just, all we do is we just keep cycling it over and over. And that's as an ex-uniformed officer.
Yeah.
So our advice, Ben, was always for members of the public is, we advise them never to get involved. You used to call up, you know, whether it be on the non-emergency or the emergency line, and you would say, do not get involved, do not put yourself arm's way and at risk, because the chances are, even as a uniformed officer, these people, majority of them, not all, but are, like, you know, career criminals to the point that they may have a drugs problem, they may have hypodermics, which are found in people's pockets.
They might be armed. You have no idea what you are dealing with.
That's it.
To be fair, Paul, I don't. This is Matthew Barber. He is, as you say, the Police Crime Commissioner in Thames Valley. He says everyone has a responsibility to help if we want to live in what he calls a safe and prosperous society. But he's not necessarily advocating physical intervention. He says, I'm not laying down some rules on this, but I encourage people to do something. If you're in a store and you witness shoplifting happening, I think at the very least you should report that to the police, report it to the staff, perhaps take some mobile phone footage or shout at someone to put it back. That'll make the difference, Paul, won't it? If we all start shouting, put that back.
It's smoke and mirrors, and I'll send it to anybody that says that I'm wrong, because at the end of the day, I'm a proud Brit. I would always, even as I've not been in the police for a few years now, but there's always a strong sense of justice and right from wrong. And you know, I'm out with my family. If I go to a supermarket, I just get a sixth sense of somebody's doing wrong. I want to intervene, but even as a bobby that spent a decade dealing with frontline policing, I will always question whether I would get involved, because 9 times out of 10, Ben, they will attack you because their drive and their passion to get away from any sort of, you know, being held, apprehended and being held by anybody, is far greater than my sense of justice. Now, without being, you know, unduly fair to these PCCs that were brought in, again, smoke and mirrors in my opinion, a lot of them have not got a policing background. They're just members of the public coming in. They may be in a prestigious position prior to being a PCC. They haven't got a clue. And frontline police how to deal with members...
He's done himself no favours, Paul, has he? He looks like a bit of a wally here. Because firstly, the idea that people aren't already reporting this stuff to the police, that the shops aren't doing it, and the police are completely failing to deal with it, is just he's living in a cloud cuckoo land if he thinks that people aren't already reporting this stuff. Secondly, the idea that if someone shouts, put that back, as this guy is advocating, that this hardened shoplifter goes, oh, yeah, do you know what? I'm actually making thousands a week off reselling this baby formula. But yeah, right. If I'm upsetting you, then I mean, it's just pathetic. It's utterly pathetic, isn't it? Paul, great call. Thank you very much indeed. Paul in Leicester, speaking sense this morning. Who is this guy? And why is he in the police if he thinks it's on the public to help prevent shoplifting rather than the people who are employed to stop criminality, namely him and his force? Keep your calls coming in on that. Keep your calls coming in on whether criminals being banned from going to the pub is really a proper punishment, as the Labour government seems to think it is. Talking of the Labour government, 8:38 is the time. They are due to publish a new strategy on violence against women and girls within weeks. Except, I actually can't believe this, except they seem to have forgotten the girls bit. An urgent letter that has been sent to Home Secretary Yvette Cooper by groups including the NSPCC, Barnardo's and the Children's Society warns that the new strategy for violence, tackling violence against women and girls, seems to have forgotten child abuse, leading one expert to say, if you take child sexual abuse out of it, where are the girls? Which is a very fair point, isn't it? If there's no element about child protection, it's not a strategy against violence on violence against women and girls. It's a strategy on violence against women. Why are the girls deemed unimportant in this scenario? Helen Hoddenut joins us, LBC's reporter, to bring us the very latest details on what, Helen, seems to be a pretty serious backlash from some very reputable organisations about a really key element of government Home Office policy.
Yeah, so this is an urgent letter that they've sent out. Ministers have promised to halve violence against women and girls in a decade, with this strategy expected to be published next month. And successive governments have tried to tackle VOG, violence against women and girls. This will be the fourth strategy published in the last 15 years. But children account for 40% of all victims of sexual offences in England and Wales, despite making up just 20% of the population. So the success of this strategy, it goes without saying, could not be more pressing. And advocate groups say this is a real opportunity to make a tangible change. Earlier this month, though, it was revealed that child exploitation and abuse might not be included in the strategy's scope. And now 10 major child rights organisations have written to the government to warn that it just won't work if it's not included. Anna Edmondson is head of policy at NSPCC and says girls are at risk of being failed.
Each year, around 500,000 children in England and Wales will experience some form of sexual abuse. And though this affects all children, including boys, we know that girls overwhelmingly bear the brunt of some forms of sexual abuse and violence, including that taking place online. This strategy will really miss a golden opportunity. The needs and best interests of those girls will be overlooked once again.
So the letter says that VOG and child sexual abuse are inherently and deeply connected, with shared root causes like gender inequality, misogyny and power imbalances, meaning that a coordinated and joined up response to them will be essential to tackle them. The government says that the VOG programme will take action to tackle child sexual abuse, but says it wants to create a distinctive separate plan to, quote, ensure those crimes get the specialist response they demand. But some survivors of these crimes are deeply disappointed by this development. Poppy Eyre was abused by her grandfather when she was 4 years old. She says her message to the government is that if they're going to make child sexual abuse a separate focus, they need that strategy fully implemented now.
VOG is violence against women and girls. If you take child sexual abuse out of it, where are the girls? What are the police forces now doing? Are they holding child sexual abuse at the same level of importance as they are with violence against women? You'd hope so, but potentially not, because it doesn't need to be in the figures. It doesn't need to be, and that's being quite cynical. But children are once again being left in the air with no one advocating for them at the moment.
So the government says that the strategy will include targeted action to tackle child sexual exploitation and abuse, and also this distinctive work stream to tackle the issues. But the strategy is due out in a matter of weeks, so any changes at this point will need to happen quickly.
Helen, thank you very, very much indeed. Helen Hoddenut, LBC's reporter. Can you believe that? Imagine the meeting in Whitehall. It's like some sort of sitcom, isn't it? It's like the thick of it. Right, we're launching our strategy on violence and women and girls. Is there anything we might have forgotten? Minister, I think you might have forgotten the girls. Honestly, what an absolute fiasco that is. They say, oh, we'll do a separate strategy for the girls. How can you launch a plan for tackling violence against women and girls without focusing on the girls and the child abuse element of it? It's just insane. 0345 6060 973. Do let me know what you make of that and whether you think it's absolutely as balmy as I think it is. 8:43 the time. In the meantime, back to your calls on the government's latest other balmy plan, in my view, banning people from going to the pub in place of sending them to prison. Anthony's in Peterborough this morning. How are you, Anthony?
I'm good, thanks. How are
good.
You?
Yeah, I'm all right, sir, thank you. I mean, I'm distinctly unimpressed, I think, would be my summary of this latest proposal when it comes to justice. What do you make of it?
Well, it's ridiculous. I think the problem really is the prisons. At the moment, when you go to prison, you get 3 square meals, get a TV, you get a PlayStation, you get phone calls.
Not everyone gets a PlayStation.
A lot of them do, they?
Some of them do.
But I spent some time in the military.
Right.
And actually went to a military prison for something silly, fighting when I was in a nightclub. But I can assure you that if they were treated like they were in a military prison, they wouldn't want to go to prison. So it would actually be a deterrent. At the moment, it's not a deterrent, is it?
What was the military prison like?
Well, you got up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you had to clean your cell out, and then it was inspected every day. Then you had breakfast, and then you had a mile and a half run every day, and then after that it was lessons, and then another inspection at lunchtime, and then you'd have your evening meal. And you could watch communal TV till 10 to 8, so that if you're watching a soap, you miss the last 10 minutes. And then you're locked up in your room or your cell at 8 o'clock, and you either had the light on or off because the switch was on the outside. Inside your cell, you had a Bible, and the only clothing you're allowed was what was issued to you, and it had to be A4 size. Trust me, if they were treated like they were in military prisons, wouldn't all be seen.
Really
to
tough.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
The problem is, Anthony, I hear you completely. I'm not disagreeing with you, but we simply don't have the prison spaces. So we need to find ways, do we not, of punishing people properly, but doing it without sending them to prison. If it's not pub bans, and I agree with you, it's not, what might that look like? What's a tough punishment that can be served in the community?
Well, I agree with what you said earlier about the high-vis jacket and cleaning the streets, picking up litter. But going back to the prisons, if the prison was tough and horrible, that would be deterrent enough. They wouldn't want to go to prison. Now, they don't care if they go to prison, do they?
Some don't. I've got to say, on my normal show, 10 p.m, we've spoken a lot about prisons, and an awful lot of people call in and say people do not appreciate the utter hell that I endured going to that prison. Some people, you're right, absolutely spot on, don't fear it. I think for a lot of people, it's not the kind of cushy existence that you're necessarily saying it is, Anthony. For some, is it for too many? Perhaps it is. Thank you for calling this morning, Anthony, in Peterborough. Ben Kentish, Infinite Ferrari here on LBC this Bank Holiday Monday. Still to come. Nigel Garage, Prime Minister of the pub, of the pint, of the people, vote selector. Who on earth is the politician behind that slightly bizarre AI rap video? Get your text, get your predictions coming in. 84850 to text, 03456060973 to WhatsApp. Give you the details and the very latest on that after the LBC News headlines at 8:47 with David Dom.
Former Labour Home Secretary Lord Blunkett says more action is vital to get a grip on the number of small boat crossings. Charities say the pledge to tackle violence against women and girls can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sex abuse. It's been suggested there should be on-the-spot fines for people who play music out loud on buses. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Definitely do expect delays again today in West London with the Notting Hill Carnival continuing. The roads will stay closed until around 6 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. So roads all around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park stay closed. In Mortlake, Lower Richmond Road is closed both ways. That's all down to an accident. In Barking, Linton Road's had to be closed northbound, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. Now on the trains, there's a reduced service for the gas Gatwick Express today because of it being bank holiday. And also Great Northern and LNER services are delayed by about 20 minutes via Hitchin because of a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Winplus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webanycar.com.
1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. 1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's save a menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m, price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery, subject to availability.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Interesting this from David on WhatsApp. Morning, Ben. I spent 30 days in a military prison. I would be more scared of going to a civilian prison with the threat of violence, drugs and sexual abuse. Military prison is just a more regimented routine of what would be a normal day in the military. So a little bit of a counter there to Anthony's call, suggesting that military prisons are much tougher. Talk to Billy in the Isle of Wight, Rob Maidstone, all about the government's push to punish more people by banning them from going to the pub instead of sending them to prison in just a moment. First...
Broke the plan with a rod and pint, 2029 now looks so right. For real.
Just keep playing that over and over again. If I said to you, which politician in this country is least likely to put out a rap video featuring them generated by AI, you'd have Nigel Farage pretty high on the list, wouldn't you? You'd have him probably right at the very, very top, and yet that is what you just heard. That is Nigel Farage, who has released a video created with artificial intelligence showing him dancing, rapping, posing in a club, and one of them is wearing a big rapper's fur coat. He says it's just a little bit of fun, and yet it's not the first time he's put out an AI-created video. Donald Trump has also started doing the same. So is this a concerted strategy? Rhea Freeman is an award-winning communications and PR specialist. I mean, it is fun, Rhea. It's very funny, actually, when you watch it. Bizarre and weird and a little bit creepy, perhaps, as well, but also fun. Is there something more serious behind it, or is this just sort of slightly strange political banter, do you think? Morning.
Morning. I feel it's the latter. I feel it's something slightly strange. It's very different. I mean, he's had over a million views in around 13 hours, according to Twitter, X now. So it's definitely made an impact and it's definitely got us all talking. And I guess if you want to get back into the spotlight again, if you've been out the spotlight for a while, what you want is something that people go, what on earth is this? I mean, I've watched it more times than I'd care to admit because it's just so bizarre.
Yeah. But I mean, he's a canny, cunning politician, old Nigel Farage. His team are quite good at this stuff as well. That's why they're ahead in the polls. Why? Like, there must be some sort of political incentive or political advantage they see in doing this, Rhea.
Yeah, I think it's different. As you say, if we look at the UK politicians, I can't imagine Keir Starmer doing this. I wouldn't like to see Keir Starmer do this, to be honest, because in his position,
I'm not sure I want to see Nigel Farage do it. Respectfully.
It's a fair point. It's going to be burnt into my retinas forever now. But yeah, I think it's very disruptive in terms of what we're used to. It's very, we're talking about it now. It's taking over. It's something different. So it's actually bringing the focus back onto Farage and his ideas and what he's saying. So I think in terms of disrupting and being back in the spotlight again, that's a time when it is quite a bank holiday. Monday as well, if you think about the timing, there's probably not an awful lot going on at the moment that people are going to be posting today. So it's really dominated the space. So I think it's getting that focus back, getting him back into the spotlight and getting people talking about him.
He shows that he's sort of, I mean, I guess it's designed to show that he's got a sense of sort of fun, that he can laugh at himself, that he's the sort of bloke you'd want to go for a pint with in a way that you probably wouldn't, if you're honest, with most politicians. Really. It's to make him stand out as the kind of normal geezer vibe, which he's very good at. He's very good at looking like that, isn't
he? He is. I mean, I think if we dig a little bit deeper, he's not that normal geezer at all.
Exactly. And I think that's why it's so good.
Exactly. And it is that kind of juxtaposition, isn't it? I think as well, if we think about AI generally, it appeals more to the younger generation, I'd say. So perhaps as well, this is a route to become more of a genuine choice for younger people, because they think he's kind of down with the kids or up with the kids. Wherever the kids are, he is there too.
He's jokes, I think, as the kids would put it.
There you go.
There you go. Thank you, Rhea. Rhea Freeman, award-winning communications and PR specialist. Worth having a watch. Let me know what you make of it. 0345 6060 973. Why do you think Nigel Farage is doing this? It's just, nothing's just a bit of fun in politics. It's not just, oh, ha, 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 this is funny. There will be some thinking behind this, I have no doubt. What do you think it is? 8.54 is the time. After nine, I tell you about the Tories' latest plan to crack down on antisocial behaviour on trains. First, Billy's calling from Ventnor and the Isle of Wight to talk more about the Labour government's plan to ban people from the pub, Billy, rather than send them to prison. I mean, what, seriously? Morning.
Hi, morning, Ben. Nice to speak to you.
And you.
It seems rather bizarre to me that since when did it become so unpopular for our governments and our leaders to actually tackle and control crime themselves? I mean, we're being told to report crime if we see it when we're out and about and to take it into our own hands.
Yep.
And now if you see someone going into the pub, we've now got to let pub landlords effectively become the new PCSOs. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Whoever came up with this idea, I think we're either on something or they're obviously reading some kind of fantasy novel. I mean, being serious, I've got to mention tagging to you, and I've mentioned it before to you. It's nine times cheaper to tag somebody. What we need to do is just tag people that commit their first offence, and out of nine people, even if one of those commits additional crime, if you put nine people on a tag and one person commits further crime, you put them into prison, it will soon send a very clear message. Could you imagine if you opened up your local paper tomorrow morning and you saw that a judge had put nine people on a tag for a year? Because it is considerably cheaper. For the price you will pay as a taxpayer, us as taxpayers, to put somebody in a prison for a whole year, it's about £53,000. It's just under £6,000 to tag somebody. I suggest that's what we do. We monitor them, and then if they go to a pub, let the police deal with it. That's their job. And actually give them the money, which they'd probably save.
The problem is, Billy, you need a whole army of people just monitoring the data from those tags and responding. Whereas if you tag someone right now and you say, right, you're banned from going to the pub as a punishment. Firstly, I don't think it is much of a punishment. Secondly, even if they break that rule and do go to the pub, I would hazard a guess that the chances of anything happening in response to that, given the state of police and probation in this country right now, is pretty much zero.
Well, you're absolutely spot on. So rather than going after the shoplifters, because we can't go after the shoplifters. It's all very well saying go after the shoplifters and bring the heavy mob in to take them away. But I used to work in a shop. They ain't even coming out unless it's £250.
This is it. The chance of the police actually turning up because someone who's not meant to be in a pub has been to a pub is slimmer than Nigel Farage doing a rap video, for example. Well, but you take my point, Billy. It's not going to happen.
You're right, it isn't. And so this argument about, well, we should be tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime, it's not even a debate at the moment, because as you've highlighted, as I'm highlighting, the money simply isn't there. So what I'm saying is simple, really, I think, in response to that. Okay. We go after the real criminals, and the real criminals are the big multinational corporations that legally avoid tax in the billions every
single year. Well, you said it there, Billy, if they're not criminals, if they're doing it legally. might be moral criminals in your view, but they're not actual ones if it's legal. Billy, it was lovely to talk to you. Thank you. Final word on this one before we move on. Rob is in Maidstone. Morning, Rob.
Morning.
Nice to talk to you in the morning rather than the evening for a change.
Yeah, I'm going to be the dissenting voice.
Go on.
We can't punish our way to good behaviour. Any parent or pet owner knows that constantly punishing doesn't get you the behaviour you want.
But Rob, just jump in. They also know that punishment is a key part of enforcing discipline, or the threat of punishment is a key part of it.
But Ben, we have one of the highest per capita rates of incarceration in Europe.
Yep.
We have the highest reoffending rate in Europe. We've already know that one of the reasons we don't send women to prison so much is because we know it dislocates people from their communities, it breaks down families. So anything that will allow us to try and modify the behaviour of low-level criminals is worth a try.
Rob, I'm with you completely on sending fewer people to prison. It's not a choice. It's a necessity at this point. But there have to be tough punishments in the community. And simply saying you can't go to the football, you can't go and watch a gig, is not a tough punishment in my book.
But it is a way of re-establishing boundaries with people who
barely
obviously lost them. And we have tried being tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime. And all we have is more people in prison and more reoffending.
Rob, I hear you. Lovely to talk to you this morning. You take care of yourself. Thank you, Rob, in at Maidstone. Wrapping up that conversation, coming up in the next hour, I'm going to tell you why Generation Z workers are now rethinking their decision to want to work from home and yearning for a return to the office, that according to reports today. But first, the Conservatives say they would ban loud music on public transport because it's becoming an antisocial nuisance and ruining millions of people's journeys, which it absolutely is. Every single day that I come into work now, somebody is being, won't use the word that I sometimes use to them, on the tube. Completely, completely disrespectful, completely antisocial. Making it illegal and asking the police to enforce how loud somebody is playing their music or their TikToks, that's not the answer, is it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. A former Labour Home Secretary says more action is vital to get a grip on the number of small boat crossings. Lord Blunkett has suggested a temporary suspension of parts of the European Convention on Human Rights. It comes as the Prime Minister considers curbing the power of some judges in asylum cases. Michael Bradley from Stand Up to Racism has told LBC it would set a dangerous precedent.
I think the vast majority of people are coming into Britain from very difficult circumstances, escaping poverty and war, and the idea that you water down their right to appeal or water down their right to put their point of view across, really, I think is simply a response by the government, which is running scared of the possibility of votes hemorrhaging to reform UK.
Campaigners have warned the pledge to tackle violence against women and girls can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sex abuse. Charities have written to the government with their concerns over the upcoming strategy. LBC's Helen Hoddinott has more.
Ministers have promised to halve violence against women and girls in a decade, with a strategy expected to be published really soon now in September. And advocate groups say this is a golden opportunity to make a real change. But earlier this month, it was revealed that child sexual exploitation and abuse might not be included in the scope of the strategy.
The government says there will be targeted action. A series of nationwide strikes by bus drivers is being warned in a dispute over paying conditions. Around 7,500 members of Unite are either walking out or voting on action in cities including London, Manchester and Newcastle. The union says the current deal doesn't reflect the strain of the job. Figures show nearly 800 shoplifting cases have been going unsolved every day. The data obtained by the Liberal Democrat shows just 18% resulted in someone being charged across England and Wales in 12 months to March. Lib Dem MP for Maidenhead Joshua Reynolds told Ben the figures are shocking.
I worked in retail for a number of years and I know how dangerous it can be to confront shoplifters where you don't know what their reaction will be. We've been very clear, it's for the police to protect us rather than to pass the buck.
And Britain's Jack Draper is looking to join Emma Raducanu in the second round of the US Open. He begins his campaign against Argentina's Federico Agustin Gomez later, after reaching the semi-final last year. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK today with plenty of sunshine, cloudy across the far west with rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
It's the delicious chocolate bubbles in Aero that make it a joy to eat. Aero. Feel the bubbles melt.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Is the time. Ben Kentish, Infinite Ferrari here on LBC this morning. Very, very good morning to you for just tuning in. If you're anything like me, you see it everywhere now. Pretty much every bus or train or tube or tram that you get on, at least one person being rude, disrespectful, obnoxious, selfish, and words I probably shouldn't use on the radio this morning, by playing loud music or their TikToks or their Instagram reels or maybe an LBC, although that's obviously allowed, very, very loudly indeed, from their phone, driving everybody else mad and not caring a jot because they are selfish and obnoxious. It's happening more and more and more. Pretty much every time I come into work, which is pretty much every day, I get the tube in and at least one person is doing that. And generally, if one person's doing it, other people think, well, if they're doing it, I'll do it. So you've got somebody watching the football on one corner. The next person to them is swiping through their TikToks at full volume. The person next to them is having a very loud conversation and suddenly the whole carriage is a complete sort of audio free-for-all. I wonder if you sort of experienced that as much as I have. We've talked about it on my normal LBC programme at 10 p.m. Monday to Thursdays a lot, about this sort of this degradation, this breakdown of just manners and decency and civility and courtesy and what we do about it. Well, what we do about it, according to the Conservatives this morning, is make it illegal. They want to introduce a new offence to mandate that on-the-spot fines would be issued to anybody behaving in that way, which to me sounds like a good idea. It sounds like a reasonable thing to do, but my goodness, it's a bit tragic if we've got to the point where the police are now having to intervene and uphold basic manners, isn't it? The other point is, how on earth do you enforce this? How on earth do you enforce people the laws against or charges against people who are playing music too loudly on their phones? And is that really a good use of police time? 03456060973. Is this a good idea? Banning loud music on public transport and asking the police to get involved and enforce it. Keep your calls coming in on that. Is that something you want to see outlawed and you want to see the police dedicating their time to? Or frankly, we've been talking about shoplifting the last hour. We've been talking about violence against women and girls. We've been talking about our prisons being full. Are there more pressing priorities when it comes to criminal justice right now than how loud somebody's TikTok videos are? That number once more for you, 03456060973. Let's get more details on this story with Richard Holden, the Shadow Transport Secretary, the MP for Basildon and Billericay, and the former Conservative Party chairman who is making or proposing this morning. Richard, very good morning to you. Who would be responsible for enforcing this under your plan?
Well, I think the key thing is the backstop in the end has to be the police. And I think this is what we've been looking at for a while now. We've been looking at all aspects of this. At the moment, actually, we do have, it's already up to £1,000 fine if you're on the trains or on the tube. You can, it is there. It's just never enforced. And I think one of the key things that I want to see is that actually, A, enforcement on our trains and tube network. And I think actually a little bit of enforcement happening quite quickly could see societal change. We've actually saw that when Robert Jenrick did his video a few weeks ago around fare dodges, and the fact that you just saw tube staff and sometimes BTP just standing aside as things
British
were happening.
British Transport Police, yeah.
Yeah, while fare dodgers are going through. Actually, a bit of enforcement suddenly can lead to a behavioural change. And it also means that people will be more willing to say, you know, hang on a second, you know, when somebody is being thoughtless, you know, do you mind not doing that? And I think most of the time people are going to be reasonable about that. I think one of the sad things is, though, that actually the majority of journeys taken in our country on public transport are actually taken by bus. And we don't have the same laws there to protect bus users as we do to protect train users. And I think it's about time we actually carry those across. And that's one of the big proposals I'm putting in today, in the buses bill, which is coming back to Parliament later in the year. We should have some of those powers that actually the police have at the moment over trains and over tube should also be there for the buses sector
But as you say, the fact that it is there when it comes to the tube, it doesn't mean it's being enforced. The reason it's not being enforced is because, as you well know, the police are absolutely struggling to deal with crimes that are far more serious than somebody playing loud music on the tube. So the reality is, this is not going to be enforced in the way that you are suggesting it should be.
Well, you say that, but you know, we've seen a doubling in the convictions for people fare dodging over the last month before and after Robert Jenrick's videos. It's quite clear that actually there is an ability to step up enforcement. And I think a bit of stepping up enforcement, and I think you actually raise an important point about, aren't there more serious crimes? Well, I think if people are fare dodging, if people are playing music loudly on the tube, then I would suggest that there is probably going to be, if somebody's breaking the law in one area, there's a likelihood they're probably breaking the law in other areas as well. If they're not wanting to be a part of society, I think you'll see this broken window theory. We saw it, you know, over the years in our major cities around the world before. When things start to break down in one area, they break down more comprehensively. And I actually think a little bit of enforcement across the board would actually really help society as a whole to tackle some of these other what would be considered, you know, antisocial behaviour issues which we're facing, you know, on a daily basis, whether it's on our public transport system or whether it's in our streets.
How are they going to judge, Mr. Holden, what is too loud? I mean, if someone's having a quiet phone conversation, is that okay? But if they're shouting, what, they have decibel meters? How's this going to work?
I think everybody knows that there's basically a reasonableness test on any of these.
It's not that, because what is annoying for one, what I find annoying in terms of people talking loudly is very different to what my wife finds annoying, because she's much more tolerant to noise than me. Well, no, how do you define it?
I mean, Ben, she'd have to be living with
you. Exactly, that's why she's married to me.
No, but I think realistically, you know, everybody knows the difference, right? Everybody knows the difference. And, you know, even over time, everybody will have had a, you know, conversation on the phone or something, and somebody's looked at them across a tube carriage or a train, and they've moved through the vestibule area. Everybody gets that, right? And actually, this is all about society self-policing a lot of the time. But when there are people who are consistently, you know, deliberately out there often, you know, just enforcing their music on an entire carriage or enforcing their, you know, and everybody knows what that looks like. And I think that's where the reasonableness test comes in. And we have the same with, you know, in all sorts of other areas. And I think it's not unreasonable to say that, you know, as part of that broader push, that we've got to have something on this, because it drives people absolutely bananas and it ruins their lives on a daily basis.
I don't disagree with you at all. It is becoming a real blight for those of us that regularly use public transport. And yet I can't help wondering what's gone so wrong that we are now basically asking the police to intervene and enforce what even 10 years ago would have been seen as just basic courtesy and manners, Mr. Holden. I mean, what's your sense of why this has become such a problem? Because people, to some extent, personal responsibility should be why people don't play music very loudly in this way.
Well, I think you raise an important point, Ben, and it's the same with fare dodging. Actually, a few years ago, it was seen as so socially unacceptable, people wouldn't do it. I think some of that has gone down to the fact that we've just stopped enforcing some of these laws because the police have found it perhaps too difficult, or you know, they've been sent on other things. But I think that ignores a basic tenet, which is that if people are breaking some of these laws, then they're going to be doing other things. And actually, it's a bit like when you stop somebody for speeding and you find other things that they're doing wrong, or the car's uninsured, or all that sort of thing. I think there's a lot of these knock-on consequences, and we need to have a system in which, you know, allows people to feel that they can say to somebody, you know, that what you're doing is wrong. And I think actually knowing that the law is there to back them up on that is quite an important thing as well. And I think particularly when it comes to those bus journeys as well, it's one of the things, and it's an important point today. I think for a long time we've Yeah, bus has been tracked separately to train and to tube travel. And I actually think, you know, for a lot of people going on a bus on a daily basis, you know, they will experience some of these issues. And at the moment, there isn't a legal backup there. And that's one of the things I also want to see extended.
That point. Absolutely. Let me just ask you while I've got you, Mr. Holden, if I could, about a couple of other stories.
Of course.
A lot of your colleagues are very critical of Angela Rayner after it emerged that she, working class, done well for herself, has bought a nice seafront home down in Brighton. What is it that you think she's done wrong?
I've got no issue with her doing well for herself at all. I think there is some questions around hypocrisy at the moment, when it seems to be that she's changing some of the rules, and the government are changing a lot of the rules, and potentially also in the autumn budget some of the tax measures around second home ownership.
Yeah.
And questions as to where she's delineating as her primary residence. I think she's also been using a flat in Admiralty House in central London.
It's a government flat that she uses as Deputy Prime Minister.
A government
but why
flat.
Is it hypocritical to say second home owners should pay more tax? I am now one and I will pay more tax.
I think there are some questions over what has been designated as her primary residence. Is it the London property? Is it the one in Ashton in her constituency?
But that's completely separate from this story.
I think that's the reason that questions have been raised over this story, as to where the designation is. Well, you know, is she choosing to do that in London, which where the council tax might be lower than in other parts? I think that's the question.
She's done nothing wrong, Mr. Holden, has she? This is an absolute row about nothing.
Let's see. Let's see.
Do you think she's guilty of any wrongdoing in buying?
I have no idea, right? It's quite clear there are questions to answer. Well, you've got multiple properties, and you know what is your primary designation? You know, I think those are perfectly reasonable questions that she should answer, especially when the government is putting through new laws to make it more expensive.
Did you ask the same questions about Jeremy Hunt and his reported 9 properties? Did that exercise?
Just to be clear on this, Ben, right? These are changes that Angela Rayner is putting through. These aren't changes that the Conservatives put through. So this isn't a question of hypocrisy around anything to do with what Conservative politicians have suggested. This is a question around Angela Rayner and the laws that she's putting through and the changes to the tax system that she's proposing.
All right, elsewhere, one of your colleagues telling LBC yesterday that Lucy Connolly, released from prison after a year or so of her sentence for inciting racial hatred on Friday, was, in his view, this is Matt Vickers, a political prisoner. Do you share that view?
Well, I think it's quite clear that Lucy Connolly, what she has said and what others have said, and the sentences or the punishments meted out to them, do not seem to be in the same category.
Do you think she's a political prisoner?
Well, I mean, you know, it's quite clear it's quite clear that she felt that. I think we're all entitled to.
Well, of course, she felt that. A lot of people who go to prison think they've done nothing wrong. Doesn't mean they are.
I also don't think that Lucy Connolly, Lucy Connolly, did, what she did is she tweeted and then deleted a tweet, which also means that she
pleaded guilty to inciting racial hatred.
Exactly, which means that she doesn't think she did absolutely nothing wrong. She accepts that she did something.
Yeah, she pleaded guilty in a court of law, which is more of a sign that she thinks she did something wrong.
Exactly. I think, therefore, we've got to look at what is the punishment for that offence.
Fine, but that's not what I was asking, Mr. Do you think she's a political prisoner?
Well, actually, Ben, that might be what you're asking, because...
Do you think she's a political prisoner?
Well, Ben, let's go into this. If you want to have a conversation about it...
I'd rather you just answer the question, respectfully.
It has to be two ways, right? In that case, you know, what is she... If she's in prison for the offence compared to other people who weren't imprisoned for similar offences, that's, I think, the question which Matt was posing is justice two-tier, which is actually more complex.
But I'm not asking you if her sentence was too harsh. I'm asking you whether you think she is a political prisoner, as your colleague does.
Yeah, well, that's the fourth time. That's the point I'm making, Ben, is that actually it's quite clear there's two-tier justice here, and that's the point that Matt was making, is that you can only be a political prisoner, right, in inverted commas, if there's one rule for one and one rule for another. And I can quite understand why a lot of people in the country, including Matt, feel that actually, you know, there's different sentences for the
based
same crime
what?
Committed by different people.
Based on what?
Well, she pled guilty in a court of law,
yes,
right, to an offence,
yes,
and was in prison for 31 months.
But what are the two tiers? Is what I'm getting at.
Well, it's quite. We've seen other people,
yes,
saying things online and not being sentenced. In
yes.
The same,
so your point is that people
way.
Are treated differently based on what their politics, their views.
Well, that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point that is being made, yeah. That people are being treated differently.
But there's no evidence for that, is there?
Well, I don't think that's true, Ben.
What's the evidence for that?
I think there is real concern out there.
But what's the evidence for it?
Well, I mean, just look at the... We saw there's been a case... A, prominent case recently.
Yes.
With a Labour councillor.
Who pleaded not guilty.
Who
and
pleaded
went to
not
court.
Guilty.
Lucy Connolly pleaded guilty. So you can't compare the two cases, can you?
Well, I mean, just because somebody pleads guilty and somebody pleads not guilty doesn't, you know...
But had Lucy Connolly pleaded not guilty, she too might have gone to a jury and been let off in the same way as that councillor. You cannot compare the two and say it's two-tier justice.
That
it's ridiculous.
Just a second, Ben. I think you make a fair point on that, but I think also, you know, Lucy Connolly has raised questions herself over the legal advice that she received at the time as to whether that was the, you know, the right action to take. So I think it's slightly more complex than the black or white thing that you're trying to
suggest. Just finally, why is she being feted as some sort of hero? This is a woman who went on social media, suggested that basically migrants could be mass murdered and burnt alive for all she cared, pled guilty in a court of law to convict to inciting racial hatred, and for some of your colleagues seems to be some sort of freedom fighter.
No, I don't think she's being feted as a hero, but I think there are legitimate questions to ask around the justice system in the UK, where somebody says something, apologises, deletes their thing quite quickly, and then is given a pretty severe custodial prison sentence, when you're seeing at the same time, and we've seen this in the last few weeks and months, Ben, right, where you're seeing people who've been convicted, right, of child rape offences who are also given custodial sentences which are under 4 years in prison.
Yeah, and just stop oil protesters got 5 years in prison.
Well, yeah, but they were breaking multiple court orders after multiple different offences.
Which is more serious, what, than serious sex offence?
Let's just be clear about that, right? That was not a first offence, right, for which they were being convicted on. What they were convicted on was after they'd been literally told by courts that they should not do this again, time after time after time. They were basically found guilty of contempt of court, which is a different offence to protesting, which is, I think, what you were trying to imply in your original question there. I think it's quite clear that and that's what people are concerned about when you're seeing some people being convicted of really serious offences on one side, being given very harsh sentences, not being given as harsh sentences of people who are out there tweeting. I think that's what is a legitimate concern and a legitimate point of public debate in the UK, as should be on Britain's leading Britain's Conversation.
Got to get it right, Leading Britain's Conversation. Come on, you should know that by now, Mr. Holden. Thank you for coming on, Richard Holden, Shadow Transport Secretary, MP for Basildon and Billericay, and a former Conservative Party chairman. Come to your thoughts on that. You heard how the plan would work, according to Mr. Holden. British Transport Police would go around issuing fines for people blaring out loud music on buses and trains. Is that a good use of their time? Is that actually sadly now necessary? 0345 606 0973. To your calls on that, straight after news headlines, here's David Dom.
A former Labour Home Secretary says the Prime Minister needs to give a comprehensive answer to tackling small boat crossings. Campaigners have warned the pledge to tackle violence against women and girls can only be fulfilled if it properly addresses child sex abuse. And figures show nearly 290,000 cases of shoplifting across 12 months to March went unsolved. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M4 westbound, heading towards Junction 89 at Maidenhead, and that's where a car's broken down. Expect delays again today in West London. The Notting Hill Carnival continues, so all the road closures are in place until the early hours of tomorrow morning. So roads in and around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park stay closed. In Mortlake, Lower Richmond Road is closed both ways. That's all down to an accident. In Bow, Grove Road's just been closed both ways, and that's also following an accident. There are queues on the A127 westbound heading towards the Dunton Junction, and that's also after an accident, and the road is partially blocked for recovery.
LBC.
Don't miss up to 50% off in Dunelm's Bank Holiday event. With huge savings on thousands of products, from bedding to curtains, furniture, rugs, mattresses, suitcases, paint, wallpaper and more. Save up to 50% at Dunelm. In-store and online now. With free click and collect in as little as 2 hours. Dunelm, the home of homes. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webanycar.com.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
9.23 is the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC this morning. Let me come straight to your calls on this conservative idea of criminalising people playing loud music on public transport and asking the British Transport Police to go around issuing fines and telling people, presumably, to stick their headphones in and start thinking about others a bit more. Is that a good idea? Is that enforceable? Is it a good use of police time, given how many assaults and, you know, acts of sexual harassment or intimidation go unpunished on transport? Is this really a priority? Sarah's on the line in Enfield this morning. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Hope you are too.
Yes, yes. Lovely sunny day.
Lovely sunny day. Lovely bank holiday. Sunny Monday bank holiday for a while, for a change, Sarah.
I'm having to go away for a few days.
So you're not getting public transport, are you? Because put your earplugs in if you are. Get those earplugs ready.
And I'm pretty sure that during my journey to Heathrow, I'm going to encounter many of the incidents that I'm actually planning to talk about.
I feel you're right.
I would wholeheartedly support a ban on speakerphones on public transport and beyond that as well, which I'll talk about my experience. How it would be policed, I have no idea. I mean, like you say, the British Transport Police are, obviously there's a lot more going on, like you say, assaults, thefts, many other things that are obviously a priority. But I mean, I can talk about my experiences that I've had. I travel mainly by bus. Mm. Several occasions where I've called people out for playing music, TikTok reels. I mean, quite frankly, you know, I've sat there behind someone that's playing something that would make a two-year-old's ears bleed. So
What do you say to them, Sarah?
Well, I'm polite. So, I mean, I don't go in all guns blazing. I just say, excuse me.
You're probably more polite than me, I suspect, on this.
What I think of saying and what actually comes out of my mouth are two different things.
That's where I go wrong, I fear. Tell them off? Tick them off?
Okay, so I just say, excuse me, would you mind just turning that down? The whole bus can hear it.
What do they say?
But usually, I'd say every time I have called somebody out, they have done that. I mean, to be fair, I do pick my battles.
Mm.
Obviously, being a female on my own,
of course.
I do. Yeah. So, but I do. I mean, sometimes I'll sit there seething and not say anything. So, like I said, it depends who it is that.
But if that's all it takes, if all it takes is a polite, excuse me, that's very loud, would you mind turning it down? Do we really need the police roaming the buses and the trains with their penalty tickets at the ready?
I mean, how are they going to enforce it? To me, it's just another. I mean, yeah, in theory, it's a good idea, but in practice, it's just going to be impossible.
It sounds good. I've no principled objection to banning it. If you're going to behave like that, then, you know, fine, there should be a consequence. But as you say, practically, how is that going to be enforced?
Well, exactly. And as I was going to say, it goes beyond public transport. I took my mother for a hospital visit last week up at Guy's. We were at one of the clinics, a small clinic with a small waiting area. And there was somebody in the waiting area.
No, in a hospital.
Yeah, in
God, the hospital. God, that's even worse.
Everybody was sitting there, and I walked up to the back, and I said to him, excuse me, can you please turn that down? This is not an appropriate environment to be playing that.
That's shocking.
And he looked at me.
Yeah.
He looked at me, but he turned it down. And it's just, you know...
In a hospital waiting room. What is wrong with these... Sarah, what is wrong with these people? Why? This is what I keep coming back to. Why does this have to be an enforcement issue? Why do you or me or the police or the ticket inspector, God knows who, why do we have to just tell people to behave in a way that even a generation ago would have been completely taken for granted? Absolutely. Just basic manners. Honestly, what is wrong with these people? It shouldn't have to be a legal matter. What's next? Police are going to go around sort of demanding people say please and thank you and don't what? Sort of spit in each other or shower so they're not stinking out the cat. I mean, it's basic manners of sort of civility that you have to have in a society for it to work. And it seems to me too many people right now just don't have it. Sarah, lovely to talk to you this morning. Safe journey. I hope it's a peaceful journey. Thank you for your call. Let's talk to Nick in Holland Park. Nick.
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Obviously not in Holland Park at the moment, away from the area due to the Notting Hill Carnival of Crime.
You've fled, have you, Nick?
I've certainly...
Where are you talking to me from?
West Dorset.
Very lovely. Very nice. Very nice. Yes. A bit more peaceful down there this time.
It is a little more peaceful.
How was your journey?
I use public transport regularly in London, especially with my 60-plus Oyster card. And I never go a journey, I would say almost never, without asking someone to turn down. And not just music, anything amplified. I mean, the whole volume issue is ridiculous. It should just be... I would bring in a rule saying you cannot play anything on a speaker, no amplified sound.
Yep.
And by the way, not just on public transport, I do it in the street, I do it from car windows. Kids, you see, I was on the train coming down to Dorset this week. I had to ask a family whose two children both had little mini iPad type devices. Well, I don't know what they were watching, videos or something. Both on speaker.
Yeah, so common now. But do you take my point, Nick, that it's...
It's a double whammy, you know, giving your kids videos to watch.
Why do you think they do it? Because sometimes when I say this, people say, well, actually, it's just the technology that's changed. A generation ago, everyone didn't have a phone in the palm of their hand when they're on the bus or the train, or they would have been doing the same. And I say, no, I don't think that's true, because I think there were higher standards of...
I think it's become commonplace, Ben. That's the thing.
But why?
And actually, I have a 99% strike record. By the way, I never ask anyone to turn music or a conversation down. I say, would you please take it off speaker? And I'm not interested.
Why do you have to? Why do you have to keep doing
it? I shouldn't have to, but it's amazing. Nearly everyone, I mean, I have occasional sulk and sort of shrug of shoulders, but they still turn it down or turn it off. But most people are actually, you know, it's like an awareness. Oh, yeah, it's like, you know,
they just don't think.
Common, and so many people are doing it, they don't think. And I think it would, you know, if I would just say nothing amplified. By the way, I'd also go on, not in the street, not in the park.
I agree.
Not music out of car windows. And really simple, you cannot play amplified music or sound.
Car music, I'm slightly less fussed about, but I'm completely with... I went to the park the other day just to chill out for an hour, read a book in the sun. Bloke had one of those massive loudhailers, was blaring out absolutely shocking music and just walking back and forth for an hour so the whole park could hear it. I mean, I think he thought he was some sort of amateur DJ or something. But Nick, I mean, I agree with you completely on how antisocial it is. Should it really be a police matter?
It shouldn't need to be British Transport Police. And I think if it was me, I would say, let's take a draconian approach. Anyone in the park, if they've got a device,
lock
just confiscate
up.
The
confiscate
the device. And by the way, British Transport Police, if they go round in pairs, it wouldn't take very long to get round on social media for people to witness.
I hear you. It's not that they're going to be issuing absolute fines to absolutely everybody who's guilty. It's the deterrent. If you think that there might be an officer getting on your carriage, maybe you think twice about maybe you put your headphones in for a change. Nick, maybe I'm being one round to the idea that it is a police matter. Thank you, Nick. Nick in Holland Park /West Dorset. 03456060973. Is this a good use of police time? Should it be a British Transport Policing priority in your view? More on that to come. And why Generation Z seems to be changing its mind about working from home. More of them yearning to go back to the office, it's reported today. Details of that to come. News headlines first. David Dom.
The Liberal Democrat says the number of shoplifting cases without a suspect being identified are shocking. Figures show nearly 300,000 cases across England and Wales went unsolved last year. A former Labour Home Secretary says the Prime Minister needs to give a comprehensive answer to tackling small boat crossings. Writing in a newspaper, Lord Blunkett says the government needs to have a more radical approach. And it's being claimed 70% of UK consumers have been sent a scam message appearing to come from a trusted source like a bank or delivery firm. A survey is also showing more than half think AI was used for voice or picture messages. LBC weather, very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine, cloudy across the far west with rain in Northern Ireland and highs of 28 degrees.
This is LBC.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted, so you can get on with your day. Walk his ears then. Just Ask Once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details, vodafone.co.uk/network.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order. An easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Summer's nearly over. It's time to get back to real life. Luckily, Cinch has got all the essentials sorted. And we're not talking about new textbooks. Let's see. The biggest range of cars to buy entirely online? Check. Free 90-day warranty? Sorted. And faff-free Cinch servicing at a Marshall store near you? Absolutely cinched it. Everything you need and not a pencil case in sight. Cinch it for yourself today. Visit cinch.co.uk. Comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range-claim. Terms and exclusions apply.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9:35 is the time. By the way, if you're wondering why we've heard this morning from the Conservatives and we've heard from the Liberal Democrats and we haven't heard from Labour, it's because, unlike those other two parties, Labour have decided to let the bank holiday off. Slightly inexplicably, given how much news there is around, how many questions there are to put to them about the asylum protest, the asylum policy, violence against women and girls in the news this morning. But apparently, because it's bank holiday, they don't need to put any government ministers up for interview. Their choice, I suppose. Let's talk more about another story that is in the news today. This is the news reportedly on the front page of the Times newspaper, no less. The Generation Z, having clamoured and lobbied to be able to work from home following the pandemic, are now gradually changing their minds. According to the Times, young adults are increasingly looking for traditional office jobs as they become unhappy while working from home. 4 in 10 of those aged 16 to 24 say that they feel lonely or socially isolated because of their work conditions. 45% of them say they are considering moving to roles that provide more social interaction. Fascinating. Not the way that we were told this was going to go. Kate Jopling is a loneliness expert who has been involved in the campaign to end loneliness and has written several reports on loneliness since the pandemic. Kate, we've got a specific problem, don't we, with young people. 1 in 3 of every young adult reports feeling lonely quite often. How much of that do you think is about these changes in working habits? Kate? No, we'll try and get Kate back on a better line so you can actually hear what she's got to say. 9:36 is the time. Your message is coming in about this Conservative proposal to crack down on people playing loud music on the tube and on the trains and on the buses. Jonathan says, it's already impossible to police shoplifting, bike and phone theft. The Tories just want to blame Labour for another thing that the police aren't enforcing. It's pathetic, really. We'd need at least one copper on every bus, train, street corner and in every shop in the country. I don't know, Jonathan. I slightly take the point that actually a few instances of enforcement might deter people from doing it in the first place. But maybe you disagree. Come back to your thoughts on that in a moment. I think we've got Kate back on a better line. Kate Jopling, loneliness expert, to talk about this backlash by Gen Z against working from home. Kate, I don't know if you heard my question. I was saying we've got a real problem in this country with loneliness amongst young people. How much of that do you think is attributable to working from home?
Yeah, I'm sorry for the losing you
no
there.
Problem.
I did hear your question, and I've been thinking about it. I mean, I think it's really complicated, as it always is with loneliness. But I do think the conditions in which we work are such a massive part of our lives that they're absolutely going to impact whether or not we feel lonely, and particularly in those young years of our lives where we're kind of finding our way in the world. I think we need things that anchor us. We need things that anchor us to places and into groups of people, so it's easy for us to find people to connect to. And if you think about, if I think about my life, I don't know about yours, but for a lot of us, I think the workplace was a really important part of those early years of finding your feet, particularly, you know, if you've moved into a new city or moved away from home. So I think it's absolutely the case that working from home for some young people absolutely may be impacting their levels of loneliness. It's really important, though, I think, that we don't rush to say that everyone wants to throw away all of the flexibilities we gained in the pandemic, because, it's 4 in 10 young people are saying it's making them more lonely. That's another chunk that are not experiencing that. And some of them might be juggling childcare. They might have a wonderful relationship with people in their community. So as with all these things in loneliness conversations, it's always a nuanced picture.
And I'm just sticking with the work sort of focus for a moment. It's not just where people are working, is it? It's also the gig economy, the fact for a lot of people they don't have regular shifts, they don't get to kind of have the same colleagues every day, they don't know when they're working. A lot of jobs like delivery drivers are very isolated. It's the nature of work,
absolutely,
beyond just the nature of the workplace that has changed.
Absolutely. And I actually think that we need to look much more seriously about insecure employment, gig economy and all of those issues and how those are impacting young people's experience of work, which, like I say, is a massive chunk of your life for much of your adulthood. And so if that isn't giving you good quality relationships, opportunities to interact, opportunities to feel fulfilled, those things are going to really impact how you're feeling and might well impact how you are doing in building relationships, not just in those working hours, but outside as well. Because if you don't feel valued, that impacts the whole of your life.
And obviously work's part of this, Kate, but as you absolutely rightly say, of course, lots more to the loneliness epidemic amongst young people than simply how and when they're going to work. What sort of other factors are fueling it, do you think?
Well, for me, I often hear people talking about the impact of social media, and we absolutely should be careful about how we use social media, because it can be really toxic in terms of making us think everyone else is having a better social life than us. And that is one of the things that can impact our loneliness. It's not just about how many friends we have, it's about how many we were expecting to have and what our expectations of our relationships were. So social media is something to watch. But obviously, for some people, it's the absolutely best way that they can connect with people like them. So, again, mixed picture. The one that I think we don't talk enough about is the housing crisis and how that is impacting young people's loneliness. Because one of the things we know is that big transitions have a real impact in terms of putting us at risk of loneliness. And one of the biggest transitions you can make is being forced to move. And we know that for young people at the moment, particularly in the capital, but actually increasingly in the whole of the country, insecure tenancies mean people are moving house all the time. And it's just really not good for us in terms of being able to settle down, feel rooted, and start building good relationships.
And if you're renting, moving year to year, never be able to set down roots and settle in one area, massive part of it. Kate, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Kate Jopling is a loneliness expert who's been involved in the campaign to end loneliness and has written several reports on loneliness since the pandemic. 9:41 the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. We're talking about the Conservatives trying to implement a new law that would make it illegal to play music in a loud volume on public transport. Whether that's a good idea, whether you think it's necessary, and whether you think it's actually enforceable. 0345 6060 973 is the number. I'm also interested in your theories on why this has become necessary. Why this has suddenly become, and it has, I see it all the time, why it has suddenly become such a big issue. Whereas previously people used to just have a little bit more respect for the people around them. Why has that changed? To Alf in Halifax this morning. Alf.
Hello there.
Morning.
Morning.
What do you think? Right. Is this a good idea, outlawing loud TikToks on the tube or the bus?
That wasn't my issue at all. I'm sorry, that is a totally different issue. My issue arose from something you said earlier.
Okay, go on.
You said someone wasn't imprisoned for what people perceived they'd done, e.g., I think it was posting something on the internet or something like that. It was because they hadn't done something, agreed to comply with the judge's request repeatedly. And so they were in prison for, I've forgotten the word now.
Was this the Just Stop Oil protesters you're talking about?
Yes, yes. People like that who are doing things out of conscience.
Right.
Not necessarily violence. They get arrested, they appear before a judge. He says, oh, no, you haven't to do that again, you know. And they go and do it again, and they get arrested again, and they go and get arrested again. And then
so it's the repeated element of it. Fine.
Yeah.
Alf,
not be able to do that.
All right, Alf, let me bring you back to the loud music on public transport, if I could. Do you think it's a good use of police time for them to be going around issuing fines for people who are just, you know, on the phone a bit loudly?
No, but I do think that people ought to have respect for other people around them.
Do you think that's decreased, or do you think it was always the case that this has been a problem?
I think, yes, it has decreased.
People's respect for each other.
Yes, I think people don't respect one another as much as they used to.
Do you know any ideas why, Alf?
Yes, it's because they were sat upon during COVID, if you like. Because there was so much that they couldn't do.
Right.
And so now that they've got the freedoms, they're going to explore everything as if there were no...
That's interesting. It's a backlash to the restrictions that people were put under in lockdown.
Yes, yes.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because COVID was a time, you know, more than perhaps any time since the Second World War, where we were really reminded of how interconnected we were and of our responsibilities to each other. Breaking one rule could literally lead to somebody dying. And yet our response to that has been to sort of become even more individualistic than we were before.
Well, I'm going to admit something to you now.
Go on.
During COVID, I kept my distance from people, but I neither had the vaccinations for my own reason, not because I'm anti-vax, for my own reason. And I kept up my normal daily exercise.
Okay.
Which involves walking about 10 miles a day.
Wow. That's good going, Alf. Good for you. Thank you very much for calling in. Alf in Halifax. That's interesting, isn't it? That it does seem to me that it has got a lot worse since the pandemic. This sort of it's an entitlement, isn't it? I can do what I want, and who are you to stop me? Whether that's fare dodging, whether that's I'll play my music as loud as I want and I don't care if it annoys you, whether it's stealing from shops because I can, whether it's road rage incidents, which are up 40% in a year. This sense of I'll do what I want and no one's going to stop me does feel like it's got a lot worse in the last 5 years since COVID. That's right. Why? And are those two things linked in your view? 0345 6060 973. More of your calls to come on whether this is a good idea and why it's become necessary in the first place. Straight after the news headlines, 9:45, David Dom.
Figures seen by the Liberal Democrats show suspects being identified in less than half of shoplifting offences. Further strikes by bus drivers with the Unite Union could be happening in the coming weeks, and people could face tougher punishment for playing music out loud on public transport. LBC weather very warm and dry across the UK with plenty of sunshine and highs of 28.
Expect delays again today around West London with the Notting Hill Carnival continuing. Those roads will stay closed until around 6 o'clock in the morning. So this is around Holland Park, Shepherd's Bush, Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove and Westbourne Park. Also, the problems in Mortlake continue. The Lower Richmond Road is closed both ways after an accident. The A12's had to be closed in both directions at Littleheath at the Barley Lane Junction, and that saw down to an accident. The A127's also closed westbound between the Fortune of War and the Dunton Junction, and that's also after an accident. In Bow, Grove Road is closed both ways between Roman Road and Ashcroft Road, also following an accident, so do expect delays.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Paul Brand.
Flying the flag for what exactly? As Union Jacks and St George's Crosses are erected across England, what is the message they send to you?
Paul Brand on LBC.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes, the ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Okay, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Neen Park's this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home. Brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the big lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish.
9:49 the time. Back to your calls on the Conservative proposal to outlaw loud music on trains. I'm absolutely on board with it, no pun intended. But is it enforceable? If it is it a really a good use of police time? 0345 606 0973 to Becky in Haringey this morning. Becky, what do you think? Morning.
Morning, Ben. Two things. I think we ought to retire the phrase common decency, because it's not so common anymore.
Uncommon decency. That's depressing, yeah. Becky, isn't it?
Yeah, I think similarly, I'm afraid about sense as well. The word the term common sense also doesn't really apply very much. But anyway, I think I definitely think there's been an erosion of manners and sort of civil society, and this is just a symptom. But it's been going on for years, and I actually link it back to the introduction of mobile phones, because once upon a time, when you were out in public, you only engaged with the people you spoke to. You might have your Walkman. I'm aging myself.
I remember Walkmans. Don't worry.
Yeah, but very few people outside of movies walked around with a boombox, you know,
yeah.
which I guess unless you were John Cusack in
So is it just the technology it's not that people's... Alf was saying, and I think I agree with him, that people's manners have worsened.
Yeah, but people's manners have worsened, but I think technology has accelerated it. It also, like, you know... you know, we were much more aware of other people. I think there's also, you know, you could also sort of link it to social media and, you know, the kind of combative, the way that we sort of speak, you know, the aggression, I think, in public didn't exist in the 80s and 90s, where people were so sort of primed to fight. And I think that's, you know, the way we communicate now.
Primed to fight, wow.
Sorry, yeah, that's quite extreme, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's spot on. I said wow, because I think it's a really good description of the type of mentality that I'm seeing every day. It's that kind of, I dare you to challenge me, isn't it?
Yeah, and you hear it on, in the comment, not the commentary, you know, that's sort of some of the arguments on the, you know, on LBC, it's reflected kind of everywhere. But I had a tactic very early on, because I used to think it was mad right at the beginning when people would just play music out loud. I'd sort of stare at them and wonder and look at other people and think, you know, why is anyone challenging this? So I actually carried around a pair of cheap headphones in my bag, and I would offer them to the people playing their music out loud.
What, did you have a spare really pair of headphones? Oh, Becky, I love it. What would they say?
Well, mostly it was young people, to be fair, and I think they didn't really know how to take me. And some of them, I didn't even connect it to the fact they were playing music. I was just some weird lady offering them something. So,
would they ever accept the headphones?
No one did, no.
No one ever did. No. Well, they just carried on playing the music out loud instead.
No. Sometimes, a couple of times, they were chastened and did sort of turn it off or turn it down. So, but now it's too ubiquitous. I'd just be spending my whole life doing it.
You'd lose a lot of headphones. Becky, lovely to talk to you this morning. This is it. Primed to fight is exactly how some of these people seem to behave. Great call, Becky. Why, though? Why are people behaving in that way more and more and more and more and more? To Tiago in Bristol. Hi, Tiago.
Oh, hi, Ben. Thanks for having you on.
Pleasure.
Well, you know, forget the new laws and perhaps the BTP. I think what we really need will be like a task force of disapproving grandmothers of all colors and trades. And they would be armed with, you know, a tut, a withering glare and a trusty flip-flop.
I love it.
And just march them up and down the trains. But, you know, jokes aside, I mean, everyone has been pointing out, you know, there's been erosion on manners or people, you know, awareness of people surrounding them. But what concerns me about those talks about fines, and this is based on lived experience, is that as it stands now, they're going to give the powers perhaps to the BTP or if not to the train companies themselves. And I had many times to intervene on antisocial behavior and could never find anyone in the train to report it to or to even intervene. And had myself been picked on by an inspector for placing my dog on a seat for a brief second while I was rearranging myself while she was passing on, and had the rule book thrown at me. So what I see that could happen is that people who might commit a minor infraction or, you know, absentmindedly be flicking through their phones, which would take just a polite, oh, would you mind putting that off, end up being fined, you know, becoming a cash cow for those train companies.
It would be over-enforced.
Most likely the people who are not confrontational and the people that probably would have acted differently with a minor nudge, because I think those that are determined to wreak havoc, they will wreak havoc no matter what. And if the BTP turned up, it will be a confrontation no matter what.
You can see how it could be overinterpreted. And that was the point to Richard Holden, wasn't it? How do you actually define what is too loud? If someone's having a loud phone conversation and it turns out that's because they, you know, they struggle with their hearing or they're partially deaf.
Absolutely.
There's all sorts. It's very subjective, isn't it?
Yeah, I wanted also to take the focus a little bit away just from young people, because I see a lot of middle-aged people having very private, loud conversations on FaceTime, on all sorts of public transport. And I'm like, why? So I think, yes, but there's a lot of young people misbehaving there, but there's a lot of people who seem to be absolutely clueless about those around them, and all ages and all shapes and sizes.
Very cool. I love, it's not the British Transport Police. I love this, Tiago. You're spot on. It's the Women's Institute. Get them on the buses and the tubes and it would stop overnight. What was it you said? A tut and a withering glare. Yes, that's what's needed. Although it's not enough from my experience to stop some of these people. Thank you, Tiago. To Dan in Croydon. Dan, is this a good use of police time, do you think?
Oh, I think it's a general overreaching point actually around the use of police. I think in the UK actually, I think we've been accustomed to not following up on certain things. And actually, to the earlier call, I don't think it's a technology issue at all. I think if you look at other countries and cultures like Japan and Malaysia and all these that have probably got more advanced technology than we have in the UK for a longer time as well, you don't see this erosion of poor behaviour. And I think it comes down to a lack of general enforceability on even small things. So people just think they can get away with more. And when you penalise other things like protesters holding up certain issues and those things are more at the forefront of the media and so forth, and just that the focus is away on just basic things that are now eroding. And I think those are the things that we're seeing now. So basic things like manners, to the earlier call, it's been eroding for a while actually, and it's only because the police are not emboldened to actually follow up.
But then the police have never enforced manners. We've never needed before, as far as I'm aware, the police to tell people how to just treat each other with basic civility and courtesy. Because maybe a small minority of people weren't, but most of us knew that you don't talk loudly in public, you don't play music loudly. It's just basic stuff. I was taught that when I was a toddler by my parents. So what's changed?
I think you can get away with more. I think if you look at the higher things that you can get away with.
I think the reason that most of us wouldn't dream of playing music on the train isn't because we fear we'd be arrested. It's because we wouldn't want to be an annoyance for other people. Dan, thank you. I want to squeeze in Martin in Chingford just before I hand over to Paul. Martin.
Yeah, morning, Ben.
Morning.
So, I would like to challenge those that think it's okay. So those people that think that's all right to play their music out loud, right, why don't they ring in and tell us why they think that's all right?
I wish someone would. But I don't think they'd fess up to it, Martin. And I think the people... Is it that the people who are doing it don't realise they are the problem? They might be nodding along saying those people are really annoying when they are the ones doing it.
Well, I don't know, but, that's why I'd like them to ring in. Because I would never... I just move. When it happens to me, I just move.
You'd never do it?
I will not come... No, I would never do it for the reasons you said.
Not because you'd fear... This is it, Mike. It's not because you would fear being punished. You just would never do it in the first place.
No. Same as me. I wouldn't have a phone call out loud.
Yeah.
Either.
Because
Why would you do that?
Because you have manners.
Absolutely right. So we need these people to ring in and say why they think that's okay. I want to know. I want to speak to one and find out
why
you think that's all right.
Oh, Martin, I wish you'd called an hour ago. Hopefully we would have got someone, but I'm sure we will revisit this subject in future. Thank you, Martin. That is it from me for this morning. I'm off to brave the tube journey home. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your bank holiday. I will be back with you in for Tom Swarbrick on Drive from 4 p.m. tomorrow, then back in my normal slot from 10 p.m. next Monday. Don't forget, you'll find today's show on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can download that right now for free from your app store. At 1 o'clock here on LBC, it's Asma Mir. Right now, here's Paul Brand.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Great show. Coming up after 10, is it patriotism? Is it nationalism? Is it even fascism? What ism do you attach to the flags now flying very visibly in many towns across England? One flag flyer was allegedly firebombed while he put one up in Stevenage over the weekend. On the flip side, a man's been arrested for shouting racist abuse while helping to paint St George's crosses on a building in Basildon. So whatever you see in the Union Jack or the St George's Cross, it is eliciting strong reactions. The Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, says it all feels like people are seeking confrontation. Do you agree? What message do you read into the flags that are now being flown? Look forward to taking your calls in a few minutes.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Figures show more than half of shoplifting cases across England and Wales failed to identify a suspect in the year to March. The data obtained by the Liberal Democrats shows 800 offences a day go unsolved. Lib Dem MP Joshua Reynolds told LBC more investment is needed to protect the high streets.
I used to work in retail. I worked in shops for a number of years, and you would see time and time again shoplifters when reported to the police, no action was taken. Police wouldn't show up in the store. They wouldn't request CCTV footage. And so seeing this massive increase in shoplifting in the last year is really no surprise. And that's where we as Liberal Democrats say that we need to invest properly in our frontline community policing.
The government says there are more police patrols to help put an end to shop thefts. Former Labour Home Secretary Lord Blunkett says more action is vital to help tackle the number of small boat crossings. More than 28,000 people have crossed the English Channel so far this year in small boats. The government has set out a series of measures to help speed up the appeal system. Campaigners are calling for the new strategy on dealing with violence against women and girls to address child sexual abuse as well. Charities including Barnardo's and the NSPCC are warning the two are inseparable. The government has already insisted its plan will include action on child exploitation and other violent crimes against women and girls. Public transport users could face tougher punishments for playing music out loud when on buses. The Tories want to put forward changes to the current laws, which would include on-the-spot fines. The changes to the bus services bill are being tabled by the Shadow Transport Secretary, Richard Holden.
I think if people are fare dodging, if people are playing music loudly on the tube, then I would suggest that there is probably going to be, if somebody's breaking the law in one area, there's a likelihood they're probably breaking the law in other areas as well. If they're not wanting to be a part of society, I think you'll see this broken window through.
And Emma Raducanu admits she's been feeling the pressure at the US Open since winning the title there 4 years ago. Her first round win in New York against qualifier Eni Shibahara was her first match victory there in since 2021. Novak Djokovic and Aryna Sabalenka also picked up first round wins. Jack Draper begins his campaign later. LBC weather, very warm and dry with plenty of sunshine across the UK, some cloud developing in the west, rain in Northern Ireland, and highs of 28 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm David Dom.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn, Dad's cooking tea, Ash is upstairs spinning tunes, and the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas Tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Paul Brand.
Good morning, you're listening to Paul Brand on LBC, in for James O'Brien this Bank Holiday Monday. How are you spending yours? Maybe making the most of the sunshine to erect a flag in your front garden or to adorn a lamppost with the Union Jack or St George's Cross. That is absolutely what some people are spending their weekends doing. I drove back to Wales over the weekend to see my family, and I saw many a Union Jack hung on bridges across the M4 as I went on my way. Not something I'm used to seeing a lot of, I've got to say, outside of the Olympics maybe, or VE Day celebrations. But all of a sudden, people want to assert their national identity. Particularly, I'd say, there's been a step change in England. It's something I'm used to seeing in Wales, where I'm from. We regularly raise the Draigoch, the Red Dragon. In Scotland, of course, you see the Saltire. In lots of places that you go, in Northern Ireland, flags are very heavy with meaning, slightly different vibe there. And of course, different flags are flown in different communities. But in England, it has typically been less common to see, I'd say, the St. George's Cross in particular being flown. So now that people are flying the flag, particularly in recent weeks, what are they flying it for exactly? What is the message that people want to send? Some say it's patriotism, just very innocent, pure patriotism, pride in our nation. If you're English, pride in the United Kingdom, if you're British. Others, though, do see connotations of nationalism, even fascism. I asked a few minutes ago, what ism do you ascribe to it? Stupidism, says Hannah from Essex. And part of this, of course, is because of the way the far right have hijacked the St. George's Cross in times gone by, or the Union Jack. The BNP appropriated the Union Jack and its logo for many a year before the party went kaput. When I see the Union Jack, I actually see the opposite of those negative connotations. We flew it as a kid on VE Day commemorations, when we were watching the Olympics, as I say. In other words, during moments of national pride, really, national unity, or to remember the defeat of fascism. That flag, to me, represents the efforts of my grandfathers, for example, in World War II to defeat Nazism, to defeat hate. So why are we allowing some groups to twist the meaning of our flags? Why can't we take pride in the Union Jack? The Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, though, put it quite well, I think, and in quite a measured way, when he said that it feels like all this flag-raising suggests that people are seeking confrontation. Raising a flag is a statement, isn't it? There is a statement attached to raising a flag. What is it that people are trying to say, and what do they want you to say to them in response? In Wales, for example, and look, if you're Welsh, call in, tell me I'm wrong, but this is the way I perceive it. When we raise the Welsh dragon, sometimes it's just innocent Welsh pride. We're really, you know, really happy that maybe we've won in the rugby, or one of our athletes has won in the Olympics, even if it's under the banner of Team GB. But I think sometimes it's also a bit of an assertion of kind of underdog status in comparison to England. It's us saying we might be smaller than England, but we're passionately proud of that. We're rebellious. We won't have our culture erased. We're up for a bit of a debate, I think, about that, a bit of an argument, you know, at the rugby. If we're playing England, there can be a bit of back and forth with the English flags about with the English fans about all of that. I think that's maybe why it's been slightly more culturally palatable for the Welsh dragon or Scottish saltire to be raised, because it's sort of that an assertion of that underdog status, isn't it? It's about being proud to be smaller but no less mighty than your English neighbours. Whereas the St George's Cross, I think part of the controversy around that one is that it feels like an assertion of the opposite, because it's an assertion of English pride, English dominance, some people might perceive it to be, within the context of the United Kingdom. Is that true to you? Is that what people are saying when they erect the flag? Are they being provocative? Do they want people to come along and say, oh, you can't do that, you can't raise that flag, that sends a particular message, so that they can then argue back and say, I'm sick of this, I'm sick of being told I can't be proud of being English. I'm sick and tired of having my cultural identity somehow subjugated in their view. Is there a bit of that going on in all of this? I want to know, what do you take from raising flags right now? What message do you think you're being sent? Is it patriotism? Is it nationalism? Is it stupidism, as Hannah says in Essex? What ism do you attached to it? 0345 6060 973. You can text me as well, 84850. Let's talk first to Alan Lester, because he's a professor of historical geography at the University of Sussex and author of The Truth About Empire, Real Histories of British Colonialism. Morning to you, Alan.
Good morning, Paul.
Thanks for joining me. I just wanted to ask you, firstly, why do you think people raise flags? What are the reasons why people want to raise a flag and attach themselves to a flag?
I think they are diverse. And as you've been saying, the flag itself is a kind of empty symbol. It denotes a nation, but it doesn't denote anything more about the character.